biological weapons programs, Russia abstained from the vote. The United Nations Nuclear Agency and North Korean officials have agreed in principle to the logistics of shutting down the country's main nuclear reactor. No further details were disclosed. And the 2008 Democratic presidential candidates debated last night at Howard University in Washington, D.C. This is the Quality News. This is the Quality News Network. In London, the search continues for three men from Birmingham, including the possible driver of an abandoned car which was found filled with explosives. The Mercedes, parked outside of a nightclub near Piccadilly Circus, contained gasoline, propane, and nails. Authorities say the device would be detonated by a cell phone and could have killed hundreds. Similar bomb components, gasoline, propane, and nails, were found in a second parked vehicle, also a Mercedes, near Hyde Park. The chief of Britain's anti-terrorism police said, quote, these vehicles are clearly linked. Both car bombs were defused by authorities. British Prime Minister Gordon Brown, who just took office 2 days ago, said the incident reminds the public of the dangers that Britain faces. British and American authorities say the foiled terror plot involved Islamic extremists. CBS News reports that a jihadist website forum reportedly had a posting last night that said, quote, London shall be bombed. The bomb scare in London caused New York police to take extra precautions. Additional officers were sent to the mass transit system and Times Square. However, the U.S. threat level remains unchanged. In southern Baghdad Thursday, a roadside bomb exploded near a U.S. combat patrol. 5 U.S. soldiers were killed and 7 others were wounded. After the blast, the forces were ambushed by rocket-propelled grenades and small arms fire. The U.S. death toll in the Iraq War for June is 99. The past 3 months have been the deadliest for U.S. troops in Iraq since the war began. 329 U.S. forces have been killed in that time period. The Supreme Court has reversed course and decided to hear Guantanamo Bay detainee cases. Earlier in the year, the court turned down a case about whether the prisoners can challenge their indefinite confinement at the military facility. The United Nations voted 14-0 to shut down the inspection bodies that were responsible for monitoring Saddam Hussein's nuclear, chemical, and biological weapons programs. Russia abstained from the vote. The United Nations Nuclear Agency and North Korean officials have agreed in principle to the logistics of shutting down the country's main nuclear reactor. No further details were disclosed. And the 2008 Democratic presidential candidates debated last night at Howard University in Washington, D.C. This is the Quality News Network.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
U.S. researchers say that even brief exposure to secondhand smoke, such as in restaurants and bars, can result in detectable levels of a carcinogen that is linked to lung cancer. Iowa corn farmers have planted the most corn since the end of World War II, according to a report from the USDA. Rising demand for corn as food, feed, and fuel is behind the 19% boost from last year. The U.S. has reached an agreement with the European Union to share data on transatlantic air passengers. Washington says it is needed to help fight terrorism. In May, consumer spending was up 0.5%, according to the Commerce Department. However, the Americans' personal savings rate is at a negative 1.4%. Also in May, construction spending increased by 0.9%, the largest boost in close to a year and a half, and more than economists had expected. Apple's iPhone, the combination music player and mobile phone, goes on sale today at 6 p.m. in each global time zone. China's economy is expected to grow this year at its fastest pace in 12 years. China is close to becoming the world's third largest economy. Light sweet crude trading at $70.68 a barrel. And at the close of Wall Street this week, the Dow Jones was down 14 points, the NASDAQ down 5, the S&P 500 down 2. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff.
Okay, Tokyo, South America.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. I'm here. You hold a. Let the bells ring out and the banners fly. It's too good to be true. I'm here. Three cheers and a tiger for me. After what we went through in the last 36 hours, it's a little miracle that I'm here. Oh, mercy. We've got the phones cooking. You'll be able to get through the program. We took a substantial hit last night and the night before. Look, here's the fact of it. The telephone equipment that you have to use to run a radio talk show, about $3,000. Ours got fried. Reminded me of an old episode of My Three Sons when Chip's amplifier blew up and one of his in his little garage band, and his buddy looked at him and said, "Oh man, not groovy. That smells expensive." Yeah, that it came with a smell. The fine folks at Verizon managed to not safeguard their telephone lines sufficiently and got a whole bunch of voltage right down the phone line. Because we're plugged into a surge protector that had stopped, you know, I mean, this system had everything short of a condom on it, okay? I mean, and maybe that would have been the key, the latex, you know, grounding, rubber, oh, dear God. So that threw us off our game for a while. But we're back with a vengeance. Now, we're back, but that doesn't mean that I haven't been like elbows deep in phone machine guts for about 24 hours. A lot of swearing involved. Screws, little teeny tiny screws that you should have a jeweler's loop to work with. Anyway, so I got a different phone number for you. Had to climb the pole like Mr. Douglas and switch a couple of lines around. If you want to reach the program tonight, write this one down. This is not for permanent usage, but it'll probably be in use for a couple of weeks. First of all, toll-free service is love to help. Can't. But if you do want to reach the program, and I promise you, you know, we answer the phone quickly and we go caller to caller to caller to caller as quickly as we possibly can. The number is 304-658. You know that part. 5912. 304-658-5912. Learn it, know it, use it. And I think this will all work out rather nicely. Look, the fact that we've got a phone to call at all right now is a little bit of a miracle. Yeah. A little golf clap for Bob. A little golf clap for Agnes. She's going to stab me with a pencil if I don't get a little golf clap in for Agnes. It's about me.
It's all about me, Kevin.
36 hours of this, I get to be the Mary for a little while. Somebody else can be the Rhoda.
You're always the Mary.
I am not all... You're the Mary, dear. God. I'm a little loopy. I really am. After the past 48 hours. But we're here. And you're there. And I'm awfully daggum glad of both facts. Lord, you should have seen the storm that blew through. I mean, there was everything but a little girl's house from Kansas in it.
I did see Kato.
I thought I heard some Cora the Coffee Lady laughing going on as the thing blew past. No, that was Agnes. You know, Agnes doesn't respond well to thunderstorms. Oh, she's spitting coffee again. I've done that to her a couple of times today. You're so cute with drool, dear.
Shut up. Do your show.
I'm doing it. No, she doesn't respond well to thunderstorms. Now, you leave that microphone alone. I get to tell it. No, she's like something, honest to God, my lovely wife can tell when lightning is going to strike before it strikes.
Powder.
She's powder. You know, the movie, the really pale dude. No, because we'd be sitting here and the storm's rolling through and she'd jump plumb out of her chair. And then about 5 seconds later, there would be an earth-shattering, the stone-splitting crash of lightning and thunder. And it went on all night. I said, go somewhere else. You're making me nervous. God, it was like something. It was like that U-boat commander episode of The Twilight Zone, where he knew when the boat was going to get hit. Hopping around in here like a Jack Russell Terrier, honest to God. But that, you know, we're just glad to be here, really. Because I was very upset at not being on the air last night, simply because of the stuff that had come down. When you do this, you get addicted to the news cycle, And it always seems like, oh, slow news day. Lightning storm, please? Come on? Yeah. And it never happens, and you got to go, go 13 pages down in the stack. I got a story about a kid and a squirrel. But you soldier on. Yesterday, however, there was an abundance. There was the audio of George Bush sounding positively defeated. I don't know if I've still got that audio or not.
Let me check.
Yeah, listen to this.
This saying the status quo is unacceptable when it comes to our immigration laws. A lot of us worked hard to see if we couldn't find common ground. It didn't work.
I think he's going to cry.
Congress really needs to prove to the American people that it can come together on hard issues. The Congress needs to work on comprehensive energy policy and good health care, making sure health care is affordable without inviting the federal government to run the health care system.
Okay.
We got to work together to make sure we can balance this federal budget, not overspend nor raise taxes on the American people. We got a lot of work to do. When they come back from the summer, from the July recess before the summer break begins, we'll be focusing on the appropriations process. And I look forward to working with Congress to balance our budgets and to be wise about how we spend the people's money. Thank you for your time.
Mm-hmm. Be wise about how you spend the people's money, except when we're spending it on a, you know, stupid war. I'm sorry, occupation. A stupid occupation run by stupid generals and stupid defense secretaries and stupid vice presidents and stupid presidents. Now, have you ever before heard that? That was a broken man right there. That was a defeated man. That tone of voice, those were his remarks after getting his rear end handed to him on the immigration bill. And, frankly, I find this all terribly entertaining because it was right-wingers and talk radio punks like Neil Bortz. Neil, by the way, I was out and about today. Neil announced today that fat women have fat children because they deliberately fatten them up because they don't want to be seen with quote-unquote normal children. Now, I'm not kidding. And, and went on to blather about the failure of the immigration bill and, you know, and told some story about a neighborhood that's, well, it used to have lush lawns and now it's a parking lot and it's all trucks with ladders on it and panel vans and there's 20 Mexicans per house living and the landlords are just trying to get what rent out of them they can before they're condemned. America used to be a pretty nice place to live. Well, where does he want his contractor buddies, underpaid workers to live? Under the bridge? Drinking screw top wine? I can't for the life of me fathom these right wing goobers. Just, you know, evil, evil, evil. But I want to have a little fun to get started before we get into the serious business of the evening. First of all, well, there's Mitt Romney. Now, we know Mitt's a weirdo. How could he not be? I mean, this is a guy who believed that a con man in the 19th century found some golden plates that he had to read with special bifocals that told him to move to Utah and have 18 wives. Pretty weird, okay? I mean, it just is. Mitt's a weird guy. But Mitt's also apparently not somebody you'd want to leave your pet with. Okay, show of hands, because just like in Romper Room of old, I can see the hands out there. Who remembers National Lampoon's original Vacation movie? With Imogene Coca playing the crotchety old grandmother or auntie. Auntie, yeah, she was the auntie. With the cute little yippy dog. And you remember how Clark, as bumblingly portrayed by Chevy Chase, forgot that they had tied the puppy's leash to the back bumper of the car while they were at a rest stop and went driving down the road. Remember that scene? It's a little like that. I love the way it's written up in the article in Time. The reporter intended the anecdote that opened part four of the Boston Globe's profile of Mitt Romney to illustrate, as the story said, quote, emotion-free crisis management. Father deals with minor but gross incident during a 1983 family vacation. See, I told you. About the same time the movie was coming out. And saves the day. But the details of the event are more than unseemly. They may, in fact, be illegal. Here was the problem that not yet Governor Romney was having to deal with. There was dog poo all over the roof and sides of the family truckster. The family station wagon. Covered in poo. Now, where did the poo come from, you might ask? Well, this is where the story definitely makes a turn for the worse. This was another one that sent the coffee out of Agnes's nose. I got to stop telling her these things while she's in mid-guzzle. The Romney family had, and oh God, what wonderful, wonderful animals they are. I'm a dog person. I'm learning to be a cat person. But I'm mostly a dog person. And they had a beautiful Irish setter named Seamus. And they were going on vacation. Of course, the Romneys couldn't be bothered to vacation in the United States back then. So they were taking a 12-hour drive to Ontario. Beautiful place, I'm told. 12-hour drive. A 12-hour drive. And the car was just chock-a-block full of Romneys and the Romneys' luggage. And they didn't want to leave the puppy at a kennel. So how, you ask, how would the roof and sides of the Romney family truckster get covered in dog poo? Seamus poo. Let's face it, it was Seamus's. I mean, he owned up to it. Well, they wanted to take Seamus with them. So they put him in one of those big plastic pet carriers, like you see at airports and so forth. And not quite yet Governor Romney, then having what was described as an emotion-free crisis management situation. Uh-huh, you know, you see this coming from a mile away. He strapped Seamus's carrier to the top of the family station wagon. No kidding. Really. I guess they must have had the music turned up because they couldn't hear the poor dog howling and screaming. That's where the poo came from. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Romney strapped his dog to the top of the station wagon. Only a Republican. You know, you don't hear these stories about Democrats. No, no, no. We get hammered by right-wing blatherheads for being overly solicitous of our pets. We get hammered by the Limbaughs and the Savages and the falafel guys and the life support system for a haircut guy because we think too well of our dogs. You know, not a lot out there in the last couple of months on the right wing blatherfest about the fact that we can't even make our own dog food anymore, and that a lot of people are really saddened and struck by tragedy out of the fact that the People's Republic of China, that capitalist experiment gone absolutely wild, that they've been poisoning our pets. Not a lot out of the oxymoron Savage Wiener. Didn't have a lot to say about it. But then there's Mitt Romney, the guy who strapped his family pet to the top of a station wagon and went, and you know how Republicans are. This guy didn't obey the speed limit, went howling up the highway at 80 or 90 miles an hour in the family truckster with that poor Irish setter's eyeballs practically getting tugged out of their sockets by the winds whistling through that carrier. I mean, it's one thing for the dog to stand there with his head out the window going, like dogs do. When you strap them to the top of the station wagon, they don't like it as much. So, yeah, they did that. And guess what? He broke the law in the process. Massachusetts animal cruelty laws specifically prohibit anyone, this from the Times story, from carrying an animal, quote, in or upon a vehicle or otherwise in an unnecessarily cruel or inhuman manner or in a way and manner which might endanger the animal carried thereon. To which I'm sure Governor Romney says, well, it wasn't cruel. Okay, Governor, we're going to strap you to the top of the station wagon and drive at 80 miles an hour and see how you feel about it afterward. And I imagine there will be some poo to be cleaned up then, too. Republicans. God, we can send a man to the moon. Why can't we send all the Republicans to the moon? And you know how I am with visual images. Yep. Poor Seamus. I just had a vision of poor Seamus with the same look on his face as Falcor, the dog dragon from, you know, that movie. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid. Falcor, fly! The darkness is coming! The Republican darkness is coming!
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
If you missed Strictly Confidential last week, you missed Gay Fashion Tips.
So I'm sitting here in my Florida State University t-shirt and my pajama bottoms.
You missed what gay DJs named their dogs.
Disco and Boogie are their names.
You missed lesbian Bible study.
And that's my favorite line, too, out of the Bible, like, thou shalt not lie with a man, so I don't, and so what's up with that?
You missed Kiss and Tell.
And this big, tall, handsome Air Force sergeant bent down and kissed me, and I didn't wash my lips for weeks.
You missed The Pursuit of Happiness.
Are you attached, Mom?
Well, see, now this is Strictly Confidential, isn't it?
Tune in Monday through Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern for Strictly Confidential, gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered conversation radio, exclusively on the Head On Radio Network. You know you want to. Stand by your man.
You can stop scanning that dial, because he's right here, on the horn, and when he comes, it will be music to your ears. I better go get ready. He'll be here real soon. You are the faith in my car. You light my way in the dark. You are the ultimate star. You pick me up from afar.
ask Seamus. I think you're in trouble too, Governor Mitt the Twit. God, this guy wants to be president of the United States. Oh, what'll he do to the Mexicans? Well, I think we should strap him to the... You know, it's like Joe Vecchio says. You know, after they get done kicking the terrorists between the legs, then they can bring on a Mexican and promise how they'll get them back home. Well, before I was governor of Massachusetts, I strapped my dog to the top of a car and took him to Canada. I can certainly strap a Mexican or two to the top of the station wagon and drive them south of the border. Goofy, 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 evil people. You know, that really has become the theme of this program, I think. Sorting out evil from stupid, evil from goofy. Because, Lord God, Billy Bob, they are, aren't they? Let's go to the phone. Susan calling from Oregon. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
Hey, wow, the phone number works.
Yeah.
Hey, we take our little victories where we can get them.
Cool. The reason I called in is because of that clip you played with dear Mr. Bush, practically in tears, telling people what they needed to do after the Congress, what they needed to do after the when they came back.
My favorite line was the line about, and we need to fix health care without inviting the federal government to run it.
I have a message for President Bush. Shove it up your butt.
Cranky tonight, aren't we?
Oh, you better believe it, honey.
It all gets laid out, and I got a story on this later, but it all gets laid out in Sicko, which is opening around the country this weekend.
I'm dying to see that.
The overhead of an insurance company or a managed healthcare company is somewhere between 30 to 50%.
Mm-hmm.
The overhead of the federal government running Medicare...
2%.
Yeah. Canada does it at 1.5%. And you know what? The people who work for the Canadian Health Care Service aren't exactly eating beans and cornbread.
No.
Which is not to be critical of beans and cornbread, my favorite food.
Of course, by the same token, they ain't making $40 million golden parachute or $120 million golden parachute.
Well, what was it a couple of years ago? The Christmas bonus for the chief horse's rear end at State Farm. $20 million, that was his Christmas bonus.
Yeah. Okay, now, here's a little goodie for you. My job was outsourced, and before it was discovered that I had nerve damage in my hand, I trained as what was called a medical biller encoder. Now, if you want to know what that is, ask Agnes. But what it is basically is that's a person who checks to make sure that all of the codes that the doctors send in on their diagnosis go with the insurance and then match and everything goes, and then that way it can flow properly through and the insurance can pay or not pay as the case may be. In a lot of cases, it's not pay.
Right. Well, I mean...
One of the things you have to learn is... insurance. And the first thing we learned, practically, they don't want to pay diddly.
No, they get bonuses for not paying.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, plus, those people that are making those huge amounts of money and those huge, all that money that's going to those insurance companies, do you know what the people that are actually doing the stunt work make?
Not much.
If they're really, really lucky, $8 an hour.
Sure, the people doing all the data entry and the phone answering and the, you know, thank you for calling Kaiser Permanente.
Yeah, exactly. $8 an hour, if they're lucky.
Precisely. Well, that is so that the chief head honcho can get a Christmas bonus of $12 million or $20 million.
Mm-hmm. That's why I said, George, shove it up your butt.
Yeah.
Because him and his Supreme Court and the Supreme Court, you know what I think of them, too.
Yeah.
They came up with some of the most incredible pieces of ill.
Oh, I've got a stack of evil for a little further into the program. I absolutely do.
Yeah, that decision about the lower pricing.
Yeah, I got that one.
That is the most incredible piece of illogical illogic I have ever seen in my life. But then again, it doesn't have to be logical. They were paid off.
Sure, and frankly, let's be honest. They perjured themselves, both Roberts and Alito, at their confirmation hearings.
Of course they did.
We've got an outright case of perjury on the part of, what's his name, Kavanaugh, that was elevated to the, I think, D.C. Circuit. But Alito and Roberts were asked specifically and made very specific statements about their feelings regarding stare decisis.
Uh-huh.
Okay. They say, oh, well, because that's the rule of interpretation that says that previous interpretations get great weight and you use precedent to decide current cases as opposed to just going on an ad hoc case-by-case basis.
Right.
And that, oh, we just love stare decisis. Most people call it stare decisis. I hate bad Latin. Oh, we just love it. We think it's grand. We put it on our English muffins in the morning. It's so wonderful. And they have proved that they were perjuring themselves. They were lying. They had no regard for the role of precedent in the Supreme Court.
Have you ever sat down and listed on a sheet of paper the number of people in the Bush administration who could be legally, I'm not talking about whether or not it's feasible, but legally impeached?
I think Mark Levin started working on one of those.
Well, no, he was just working on a list for Gonzales. But
you got to start somewhere.
Yeah, I know. But if you sat down, you could go with about half of the Supreme Court, the ones that Bush appointed. You know, all of the ones that he appointed, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's Gonzales.
Yeah. Cheney.
Then there's, what was that?
Cheney. You could do Cheney. You could do.
You could impeach Bush.
Condoleezza. The shorter list is the list of those who would not be.
Exactly. It's the most incredible list you've ever seen in your life. I have never seen a government like this.
They're crooks. They just are.
I keep praying for divine intervention to leave a great big greasy spot.
Yeah.
And Agent Fred, that's not a threat. It's not illegal to pray for divine intervention.
Nope, it's not. At least not yet. They can't. It's like the old army saying, yeah. They can't bust us for thinking. Yet.
And by the way, I did happen to think of something. That bong hits for Jesus thing.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, that applies to whatever a student does off campus.
Yeah, because it was an off campus.
Okay, what happens if he wants to join the Young Republicans?
Well, you know, that doesn't count. because, you know, there are rules and there are rules. And the rules are for the rest of us. The right wingers and the Republicans and the members of the religion industry. Yeah, they can do pretty much what they want to.
Well, sooner or later, the pendulum's going to swing, hopefully, assuming we don't have the dictatorship declared. And they should have maybe thought about it because they have just set it up.
That's where you and I are going to differ, Susan. The pendulum's going to swing. We've already seen the pendulum swing, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We've got a Senate Majority Leader who believes in civility and reaching across the aisle and finding consensus and bipartisanship.
Majority.
No, that's what you're going to see. Because when Democrats get power, we start acting decently. And we try to respect the wishes of the minority, and we try to respect the opinions of the minority, and we try to craft compromise legislation where everybody can be at least a little bit happy and a little bit miserable, because that's the heart of compromise. We will never play hardball with those sons of bitches the way they played with us. Never.
That's fine and dandy, but both you and I, our ancestry comes from people who, let's face it, their favorite sport was fighting. And we should maybe relearn the lessons.
Yeah, yeah. I'm game for it. I'd like to see it stuck in the Senate Republicans and broken off. I got to thinking about the nuclear option from the Frist days. You know, I wrote that long ass essay. And you know, we would have been better off in a way if we'd have had the guts to filibuster Alito, and they took the filibuster away, and we took power in the Senate with the filibuster gone.
They'd have been screwed.
Well, we'd have the Employee Free Choice Act now.
Yeah.
Because we would have just had an up or down vote on it like they wanted all that time.
What we need to do is to purge the party of these dinos like Reed, who think they need to go along to get along, and you know, it's bend over, here it comes again. Sorry, we need a bare knuckle brawler as majority leader.
Russ Feingold, maybe?
What?
Russ Feingold, maybe?
Yeah. Somebody who's willing to get down and haul off. And
Chuck Schumer? Chuck Schumer's pretty mean.
Yeah. And one thing that I will never...
Hillary. You know what? I bet Hillary would be a hell of a majority leader.
Yeah. One thing I will never understand. They had the Free Choice Act, and they had the immigration bill. Now, I remember Lyndon Johnson, and I remember his horse trading. If this was during the Lyndon Johnson days, he would have been saying, boys, that immigration bill ain't going to even come near the floor until that free choice bill is passed.
Yeah. I remember, well, I don't know, I was a kid, but I know what you're talking about.
Well, I remember Lyndon Johnson. And let's face it, good old Lyndon, he may have been, had his bad points with the war, but when it came to his work in...
And a problem with dogs, too, you know, while we're talking about Mitt. Yeah.
Yeah, when it came to the Senate and the House, you couldn't beat him.
No,
he knew
not at all.
How to horse trade.
Indeed, he did.
Some good old Texas horse trading. And that's why I was just flabbergasted. They let them go with the free choice bill first, and then blew it.
I hate watching him screw up, don't you?
Yeah. Reed should have known better.
Well, that's why I ended the show a couple of nights ago wondering if labor is to Democrats what the anti-abortion people are to Republicans, people to be used.
I'm kind of tempted to agree with you, but you know,
I don't want to agree with me.
Well, they had better learn different real fast, because there's a whole lot of people all set to finance qualified primary challengers for Reed's position, for Pelosi's position, right on down the line.
Yeah. Susan, awfully good talking to you. I'm glad you were able to get through on the special line.
Helps to have a Skype connection.
You take care.
You too, and it's been wonderful having you back live. Say, give Agnes a kiss for me.
I sure will. Talk to you soon. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And onward to our good friend David in Maine. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
Well, I'm all right. I was just going to say something about that never-ending story song you were playing.
Mm-hmm.
Made me think of Jonathan Brandis. And if nobody knows what happened to him, he hung himself over a banister, so I guess he wanted the story to end. But...
Ba-dum-bum. He'll be here all week. Try the deal.
That's a guaranteed ticket to hell right there. that's one of those things. But anyway, on to something more starker. And I just made a pun, by the way, by me saying starker.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Stark...
I knew it was coming.
You knew it was coming. Mike Stark has asked the question that no one dares want to ask. We have to thank God for someone like, or at least thank a higher power for someone like Mike Stark, because when he's in a blogging room, he doesn't ask the phoned-in type puppet, type mimicky, type minstrel, type theater question.
If you were a tree, what kind of tree would you be?
Right, or what's your favorite dress? Or do you think we have a good chance of the 2008 election?
Yeah.
You know, just something so stupid.
Let's see, what's your favorite dress? That would be for Giuliani, right?
This is what Mike had to ask, and this is my only topic tonight on this.
Work it.
Okay. I wanted to ask you about this immigration thing. As it relates to the Iraq War, I think what a lot of our readers have noticed is that a bunch of mouth-breathing, nose-picking idiots that listen to talk radio were able to browbeat their Republican senators into defying their own president, their own Republican president. But we've got 70% public opinion against this war, and we can't get the Democrats to do what we want, to end the war. How can we explain to our readers why the disparity is there? Let me say... On immigration first.
And who is this answering?
This would be Mrs. Pelosi.
Okay.
And what she says, and what she says is not going to make a lot of people happy. But this is just brace yourself. Hide the kitchen utensils and the blowtorch or whatever.
All right.
Okay. Well, let me say on immigration first. As I said last night on TV, talk radio, hate radio, has beaten this thing to a froth. But they have also hijacked the legitimate questions some Americans have about the subject. Some people in our country have questions about job security, border security in the West, so I wouldn't characterize everyone who opposes it as that way. But I do think we have to try to fight for a stronger immigration bill with border security, workplace enforcement, enforcing our laws, reuniting our families, family unifications, and a path to legalization. But having said that, I don't want to paint everyone with the same disgusting brush you painted with. Laughter. But that would be an accurate depiction of those who have beaten it to a froth. And that's an it has a market. I don't think it has a market as big as the Republicans are claiming, but it has a market. But having said what you said, I'm so disappointed as you are that we can't get past the 60 votes in the Senate. Gosh darn it. But it's no use to complain about that. We have to take the court of public opinion is where the 60 vote barrier will come down. We can't kick it down internally, but we can try to point out what is at stake. The ground truth in Iraq so that in any districts, you know, I'm responsible for the House. We can pass a bill any day in the House. But it can't get through the 60 votes in the Senate to be heard, to go to the President's desk. Then we have to use our energy in another way. And I think that is the focus in the public way, as you have all done. I'm determined in this war. It is my top priority. And some of that, there are good days. Nobody thought we would ever have a vote or a timeline in Iraq coming out in the Democratic Congress in a unified way. Now the Senate turned it into a goal. We had it as a defined date of departure. We sent it to the President's desk. He vetoed it. They only gave us one shot at it. The Republicans in the Senate said, you get one shot. We're not giving you you need 60 votes after that. So also, to end this war, we have to take the heat when it doesn't go well. Because this is a strategy is more than one event, that's for sure. We are preparing legislation, and we'll announce it either today or tomorrow, depending on the House schedule, that has our original language about the timelines, the timetable. That is to say, no goal, but a definite date of departure with 120 days. The Secretary of Defense must begin the redeployment of the troops out of Iraq to be completed no later than April 1st, 2008. Not a goal, a timeline, tougher than what we sent to the President. We think we can get the support of the Senate. We can have unity with the Senate on that to have a stronger bill to go to the President. And if he vetoes it, it is still the case that the American people will see. It makes it harder every time for the Republicans to vote in favor of this war. You see the cracking of their unity with Senator Lugar, with Senator Warner, with Senator Voinovich, and I can tell you without any hesitation, in modesty, that absent our changing of the debate on the war in Iraq, that would not be happening. So we had twofold. We had to change the debate on Iraq internally in Congress, and we have to end the war. September is fraught with meaning for us. It's everything.
Oh, horse feathers.
And later on...
Some of that I understood what she said. I understand what she's trying to say, but, the folks over at BuzzFlash commented on it, too.
Right.
And they say that her eye, and this is a quote from BuzzFlash, her eyes are on winning the White House for the Democrats in 2008... rather than pursuing impeachment. She sincerely believes that an incremental series of revelations of GOP illegalities will sink the Republicans. And they go on with their analysis. My response to that, David, is that that is too far. That's too short-term a goal. See,
right.
She wants to beat the Republicans in 2008. I want to destroy them now and forever. Okay? the Republican Party, as it is presently constituted, should be destroyed. Okay, this business, I mean, I'm happy to have a policy debate about health care. I'm happy to have a policy debate about national security and try to reach consensus for all America. But they're not interested in that. These aren't consensus builders, David. These are thugs. These are common street punks in the Republican Party right now, and they need to be run out of civilized society and all of their, what do you call them, mouth-breathing, nose-picking, knuckle-walking followers with them.
I hear you, Bob. And Mike said one more thing. He put the gloves on, and he said he got another question in. And this was a more volatile question because she gave him an answer, and he didn't like it. She said, Speaker, when do we tell the public about it? They say one word. They say impeach. And I respectfully suggest that if you let this administration out of office without impeaching even Abu Gonzalez or Alberto Gonzalez, you will have set a precedent. The next Republican administration that takes office will know they can get away with anything they want because Democrats won't stand up for the Constitution. That's what millions of people are saying. Speaker Pelosi, I appreciate your point. I think that the Gonzalez vote of confidence, I'm telling you, hide the utensils, people. As you saw, did not carry. But, yeah, I understand your point, but it's a choice that has to be made. That is to say, what is the price they are paying for the exposure? Look, nobody knew any of these things about Gonzalez. Oh, my God. Let's remember how we got to where we are, and that was by the oversight activities of the Congress of the United States. I made a decision a few years ago, or at least 1 year ago, that impeachment was something that we could not be successful with. And that would take up the time we needed to do some positive things.
What very interesting language. I made a decision that.
Right. Remember, but Bob, we all live in the me generation now. So we're not out of the me generation.
No, but it's I made a determination, right, or I made a finding, or I reached a conclusion. But see, she came out and she was very truthful there, I think, David. I made a decision that. She chose. She determined. Okay, it was her doing.
And then she says this, Bob. This is the clincher. She says, "You know what I say? The president isn't worth it. He's not worth impeaching. We've got important work to do. If he were at the beginning of his term, people may think of it as differently. But he's not at the end of his term. The first 2 years of his term, if we came in as a majority, there might be time to do it all." Mike Starr comes back respectfully. That's not the question. Respectfully, the question is whether or not the Constitution is worth it. Boom! That's how you handle people. Well, yeah, the Constitution is worth it if you can succeed, but I think that we are in asserting the checks and balances.
Right, so the Constitution's not worth it if you fail.
I guess that's what she's saying.
Oh, for the love of God.
In asserting the checks and balances that we're missing are honoring the Constitution. I take very seriously the pledge, the oath of office that we make to the Constitution, as does every person in our Congress. Our Democratic Congress is their worst nightmare. Oh, yeah, because of the power of the subpoena. I think that the president's celebrity credibility now, whether it's immigration, whatever it is so low because of a great deal to the oversight that we have done. But we are in disagreement.
Oh, for God's sakes. Oh, this just makes it worse.
I know, Bob, but, this is the truth.
Because, see, does she think in 2008 that we're going to run against George Bush in absentia?
Mike, look, Mike just gave us the answer, people. There is no secret meetings to impeach people. This is it.
Now two more members of the House did sign on today.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. One of them was a very good member of the House by the name of Jim McDermott from Washington. He signed on to the impeachment of Cheney today. Another, this was rather interesting. Hank something from Georgia, no less. There he is. There it is. Hold on. Hank Johnson. Hank Johnson of Georgia.
She ends it with this. She gets a little testy with him toward the end. I'm not going to try to budge you on that, on whether the president should have been impeached. That's a different question from, are there grounds for impeachment? But should he have been impeached? Should we have gone down that road? I don't think it would have resulted in a Democratic victory that would have, in a campaign that would have resulted in a Democratic victory that would, the oversight that we have now that will build the record that will allow us to get rid of them in a major way. So I believe that we are on the verge of an election that will be a decision for greatness. Wow, how delusional can you get?
I don't think that's delusional. I think that just tells you that she's operating in a completely different universe, David. She's not in a place where you and I and the rest of America are. She sees this grand opportunity to become a juggernaut speaker. Okay.
Right.
At this point, she is convinced she will be speaker until she chooses not to be speaker anymore, and that if she and she will, she's talking about maximizing her power as opposed to being the proper congressional check on the power of another.
Did you catch what she said about Alberto Gonzalez? We had no way of knowing. I mean, this is ridiculous.
Well, yeah, that's a bunch of bull. Okay, because those of us who are liberals and progressives and have been following this evil cabal way back in his Texas days, it came out long, long, long before Alberto Gonzalez became Attorney General that he had been the fixer. And you know, somebody who does this doesn't have any business being Attorney General. He was the fixer for George Bush when George Bush's literally number came up. For jury duty. You know this story, right?
I think so.
George Bush, when he was governor of Texas, got his number called to be on a jury in Austin, Texas. And as the pretext for getting him out of it, and they had to keep him out of it because he was going to run for president, and you had to keep all this sleazy stuff out because it was already all banging around there, if he had gone on jury duty, he would have been subjected to what that process that is called voir dire, in which all potential jurors are sworn to tell the truth, have to tell the truth, and he could have been asked, have you ever been convicted of a crime? And then at the very least, he would have had to disclose his DUI. DUIs, whatever. And possibly the cocaine business could have come out too and sunk him before he ever gets started. Well, at that point in time, Alberto Gonzalez comes in with the fix and says, and crafts this sleazy piece of legal mumbo jumbo that says, the governor has a conflict of interest and could not serve on a jury because if he did, well, then someday he might be called upon to pardon the person who was tried in front of him, which is just insane.
You can't, I mean, you know what's insane, Bob, is that people like Nancy Pelosi, people like what have you on the Democratic Party, they seem to think that you can be friends without the outlaws from Deadwood. That's who we have in this administration. You can't be.
No, you can't. And I've emphasized that time and time again, David.
Have you seen the some of the new photos she has with the president?
No, gratefully, I haven't.
I mean, they're laughing it up. They're having a good time. It's the same thing with David Gregory on stage with Karl Rove. I mean, break.
Yeah, well, and that's the moment when the electorate should be looking up and going, oh, it's wrestling.
You know, I think Harmon is right. He was saying yesterday that the Democrats only have a small window of opportunity to really own this war. Then the Republicans are going to hijack it. And they're starting to right now. And Nancy is totally off her rocker if she thinks we can keep it till September.
No, it's going to be brave, bold Republicans like Richard Lugar.
Right, it's already there.
Yeah. This was the hero who ended the war. Sure.
So there's your answer, people. There are no secret meetings with Nancy Pelosi on impeachment.
No, there aren't. She has, and bless his heart, I love him to death. Mark Levine thinks that she's playing this grand game of chess where she's trying to, you know, oh, well, we didn't want to do it, but you forced us to because you wouldn't answer the subpoenas. Honest to God, David, I promise you, I say this as sincerely as possible. If Nancy Pelosi saw George Bush machine-gunning pregnant women on Pennsylvania Avenue, she would turn to the cameras and say, impeachment is off the table.
You know, Bob, this just goes to prove, the last thing I say tonight, elite capitalism is a failed experiment.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. David, thanks so much.
All right, Bob. I'll talk to you later, man.
Take care. Have a great weekend. A little slow on the button there, weren't you, Agnes? I hate it when I get the in my ear. No fruit cup. Yeah, too many buttons, Agnes. All right. 304-658-5912. If you want to get in on this last conversation, at least on this program, before the weekend. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. In London, the search continues for three Birmingham men suspected of playing a part in foiled bombings in that city. Experts defused a car bomb near a busy Piccadilly Circus nightclub. The device was spotted when an ambulance crew noticed smoke coming from a parked Mercedes. The car was found to be rigged with gasoline, propane, nails, and a detonator set to be triggered by a cell phone. Metropolitan Police say the bomb could have killed hundreds. The BBC reports a second car, another Mercedes, had a similar device in it. The car was found near busy Trafalgar Square, but was towed to an area near Park Lane when the explosive was discovered. The area was closed down while officers checked out the car. It has been reopened since then. British Prime Minister Gordon Brown, who just took office 2 days ago, said the country faced a serious and continuous threat. He said the incident reminds the public of the dangers that face Britain. Britain is now on a terror threat level classified as severe, one level lower than the highest critical alert. The bomb scare in London caused New York police to take extra precautions. Additional officers were sent to a mass transit system in Times Square. However, the U.S. threat level remains unchanged. The Supreme Court has reversed course and decided to hear Guantanamo Bay detainee cases. Earlier in the year, the court turned down a case about whether the prisoners can challenge their indefinite confinement at the military facility. There are 375 detainees at Guantanamo, and many of them have been held for 5 years. In southern Baghdad Thursday, a roadside bomb exploded near a U.S. combat patrol, killing 5 U.S. soldiers and wounding 7 others. After the blast, the troops were ambushed by rocket-propelled grenades and small arms fire. In the month of June, 99 U.S. military personnel died in Iraq. The past 3 months have been the deadliest of the war, killing 329 U.S. forces. Since the war began, 3,569 U.S. troops have been killed. The United Nations voted 14-0 to shut down the inspection bodies responsible for monitoring Saddam Hussein's nuclear, chemical, and biological weapons programs. Russia abstained from that vote. The U.S. has also reached an agreement with the European Union to share data on transatlantic air passengers. Washington says it's needed to help fight terrorism. This is QNN.
Huelhauser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the network of preferred community banks.
We're here to talk with people about their local banking.
I just wonder why you think it's important to bank in a local bank.
Because it's here in our community, in our area, and we tend to find that they have the best service for us. They are always there when we need them.
Do you like the idea that it's a local bank with big bank services and benefits?
You get all the benefits of the big banks, but you walk in, people know who you are.
Yeah. Now, it's a community bank, but it's part of a network of banks.
Absolutely. They have the resources, but of course the personal touch of a local bank.
I am here once a week, yes.
Taking money out.
Taking money out and putting it in and taking it out.
So you're doing a lot of banking in here.
I carry it in wheelbarrow.
Above and beyond banking from the network of preferred community banks. Available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
U.S. researchers say that even brief exposure to secondhand smoke, such as in restaurants and bars, can result in detectable levels of a carcinogen linked to lung cancer. In May, consumer spending was up 0.5%, according to the Commerce Department. However, the Americans' personal savings rate is a negative 1.4%. Also in May, construction spending increased by 0.9%, the largest boost in close to a year and a half, and more than economists had expected. China's economy is expected to grow this year at its fastest pace in 12 years. China's drawing closer to replacing Germany as the world's third largest economy. The former governor of Alabama, Don Siegelman, and former CEO of HealthSouth, Richard Scrushy, were sentenced today in connection with a bribery and corruption case. Each received close to 7 years in prison. Apple's iPhone, the combination music player and mobile phone, goes on sale today at 6 p.m. in each global time zone. Light sweet crude is currently trading at $70.68 a barrel on the New York Mercantile. At the close of Wall Street today, the Dow ended down 14 points at 13,408. The NASDAQ was also down 5 points, and the S&P closed down 2 points. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Laurel Krissen.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Five and a half past the hour, a reminder of the phone number for the foreseeable future, 304-658-5912, 304-658-5912. Special recognition to anyone who figures out whatever that spells. I don't think it spells much. And another programming note, we will celebrate the independence of this once great nation Wednesday. Let's see. Wednesday is the 4th of July. And the network will be dark that day as we celebrate. I will do my annual thing of standing on the front porch and screaming the Declaration of Independence at the top of my lungs and posting it on the door for others to read who may come a-calling. But we'll also do some reflections on that very, very... very, very what? It's the Declaration of Independence. It's the blueprint for every dream of freedom, hope, and liberty that has come since. That's all it is. Or maybe, as George Bush is wont to say about the Constitution, it's just a GD piece of paper. Doesn't that just make you sick? I tell you. But so, you know, we won't be here on Wednesday, the 4th of July, but every other day of the week, by George, we're right here with you. It'll be reruns, I guess. Or patriotic music. Who knows? But we'll be back on Thursday, and we'll be here on Tuesday, and Monday, and Friday, and every other day, and the phone number's 304-658-5912. Cindy is calling from the great state of Washington. Hey, Cindy, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling. Good to talk to you.
Hey, Bob, how are you doing?
I'm getting along, I think.
Yeah, well, Bat and Hatches, there's another one coming. I was just telling Agnes, we just had a great big one come over us today, and it's just gone over the mountain heading east, and I looked at the satellite on the net, and it's due to hit you in another 3 days. So.
Yeah, it'll just sweep down and make that big arcing curve and, you know, slam into us. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Well, this is the biggest one we've had this summer so far.
I don't.
Carrying a lot of water. It doesn't look like it, but it's moving fast and it's got a lot of water.
Well, I'll be unplugging stuff, I'm sure.
Yeah. We were talking about Pelosi before you hung up, and I have a point of view on that that you probably would agree with.
Okay.
And that is that I think the reason why she was selected to be Speaker of the House, the reason why they voted her in, is because she's pledged or promised them that she'll keep the government together in its present structure. And I don't mean Republicans in charge. I mean they got a party going on over there in D.C. They got their neighborhood and they got their ways, and they know who's who, who's up, who's down, who's left, who's right. And they just been spinning us for 20 years like a bunch of idiots out here and winning their seats back and winning their seats back and developing their little lifestyle. And the fact of the matter is that they don't care what happens to us as long as we keep giving them our tax money so that they can have their highfalutin lifestyle go around traveling the world and having a good old time. The hell with us, you know.
I think a lot of them are that way, Cindy. I don't know that all of them are. I like to think there might be two or three good ones.
Yeah,
I think Jim McDermott out of your own state appears to be a decent guy.
Oh, he is a good guy, but you know they got a pretty big swamp to pull their boots out of to try to move along in there. I think that Pelosi is one of them. I'm really sorry to say it. I thought that she was a liberal, and you know if she does have a card up her sleeve, she can't exactly let the news out because then their side will find out about it, and they'll counter it and stop her from doing whatever it is she's going to be
doing.
But
Lord, I hate being in that place, don't you, Cindy? I hate being there, thinking, well, you know, okay, it'll just sitting around waiting for the other shoe to drop, waiting for them to prove that they're really a whole bunch smarter than us.
Well, you know what the problem is. They let these lawmakers get away with law breaking ever since Kennedy died. Every time they muck up our government and vacuum our treasury and get a bunch of criminals in there and grind up our economy, then they turn around and say, "Well, we can't waste the time of the people. We have to, you know, we have to appoint a new leader and move on. And we can't have an impeachment. That'll waste our time." Well, they stopped caring about the law. They break the law and they won't correct it.
Well, I
don't know any other way to describe it.
I don't either, and I hate that that's how we do describe it, but it has the ring of truth to me, Cindy.
If they do not do something about mitigating this problem of getting criminals in government and then saying just because they're a government officer, and that includes a Supreme Court judge appointed by a criminal, even if they can't figure out a better way to do business than that, then we need to build a new government, and we have the right to do that.
Well, at least according to the Declaration, that's the very fundamental premise of the Declaration of Independence, is it not?
I think the Declaration of Independence ought to be an amendment to the Constitution so that the people of the United States are forced to replace a government thus described in that. You understand what I'm saying?
I do understand, because it doesn't have the force of law. It's just...
Yes, it needs to have the force of law so that we have to do it if they're acting like this. And, you know, the people are really angry, and they're the reason why this immigration thing didn't fly.
Well, you know what? No. You know what really soured a bunch of Republicans on the immigration thing? I was just reading this earlier today. It was the national ID card.
Oh yeah, that's awful.
Well, you know? It is. It is awful. It's terrible. It's god awful. It stinks. It's a direct frontal assault on the Constitution, Cindy. But in the course of consideration of the immigration bill, it was pulled. Okay,
that's great.
They were not. But that is great. But what I find interesting out of it is what it tells us about the mindset of the Republican Party. They were perfectly willing to go along and get along and, you know, vote the thing through. But when the national ID card was pulled, you know, a national ID card for you, for me, for everybody, you know, and your papers are not in order, that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
That was pulled from the bill, and the Republicans who had been backing the immigration bill then backed out because they wanted that national ID card. These people, oh, we're for freedom, and we want to hold our, want to keep our guns, and you know, we're going to fight back against government corruption with our guns. They pulled the national ID card, and suddenly, because that piece of freedom-hating garbage was gone from the bill, they weren't on board with the immigration bill anymore because they wanted to have a card for every Mexican.
Well, what else is new, you know?
Gee, when was it? When was it, Cindy? I mean, I'm just thinking here. Hasn't there been a regime with which we are historically familiar that required people who of a less preferred caste to carry identification at all times, maybe in the last 60, 70 years?
Absolutely. It's called the Third Reich.
Mm-hmm.
The Third Reich did that, and I think we're living in the Fourth Reich. No, right here in America, this is the Fourth Reich, and we better wise up and open our eyes and look at it, you know? Enough is enough. You know, like Chumbawamba says, enough is enough.
Exactly.
Right now, Halliburton has built these gigantic holding pens in the interior of the country. They've refurbished the abandoned military bases, and they've built gigantic prison systems to contain so-called illegals.
And yeah, this is not
numbers.
No, this isn't tinfoil hat stuff either. It's been acknowledged to exist by the government. The contract and the existence of these emergency penitentiary the concentration camps has been acknowledged by the Bush administration.
So while they're doing that, they're building a camera system to watch all of our movements, the same way that they watch the movements of the people of the UK. And then they want us on national ID. Then they feed us anybody that's out of line goes to the camps, right?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that what they've got in mind? They've locked down the borders so there's nowhere to run.
Well, they've already disappeared so-called illegals into some of these camps.
I know. We lost about 600 of them out of Portland, Oregon just this last month. And the people of Portland, Oregon are really angry that that happened because the mayor of Portland, Oregon has put a persona non grata flag on the federal government and said, you can't come in my city and do this. And they planned a sneak attack, and they came in and they raided a warehouse and they took away the so-called illegals before anybody knew what was happening. They did it, you know, like at the night shift or something.
Yeah, and they've done it all over the West. They did it in Utah. They've done it in Colorado. Meat packing plants, things like that. The very well-known story from the woman, she's a dark-skinned Hispanic extraction, Mexican extraction woman, a legal person, American citizen, and she was lined up with others according to skin tone. And the darker you were, the more likely it was determined you were an illegal alien. Cindy, these were union members.
Awful.
You know, they're rounding up union members, okay?
I have a daughter-in-law that's Hispanic, and she's given us a beautiful granddaughter that's half Hispanic. We look like white people, but we're mixed. and she and our son divorced, and she let him have custody because he threatened to call the INS on her. And she let him have her baby so that she could hide from the INS. And do you know how much pain that woman must be in?
I can't. I don't want...
There's no way that we can find her, and we love her. She's our daughter. We haven't found her in 3 years. She's been missing.
Oh, God.
Is that horrifying?
Yeah, it is. And that's not... if you're telling me that story, then the odds are that story has happened 1,000, if not 1,000,000 times over in this country.
That's my own family's dirty closet. That's what my own stepson has done.
Ugh. I would imagine Thanksgiving and Christmas are a little charged.
We don't have Thanksgiving or Christmas anymore. We just thought,
how's the baby?
Instead of having the tree and the relatives, we just shut down the house and we go out and do charity work. We play Santa Claus for the less fortunate in our town.
That's beautiful.
Even though we're just a hair's breadth away from them, we do what we can.
Sure.
And we work the charity and don't do anything at all at our home except that we have a nice home cooked meal on Christmas Day with an open door for anyone that wants to come in, and we thank God that we have it.
That's I wish a lot of them our family celebrations were more like that.
Now, we don't do a Christmas tree or presents or shopping or anything like that anymore. We don't hang any lights or spend any extra electricity.
Don't let Bill O'Reilly hear about this, because you're obviously part of the war on Christmas.
Well, I am the war on Christmas. We've completely given it up. It's been such a relief on me personally, because now I can enjoy Decembers. I don't have to work my tail off to put together some big whiz-bang shindig, you know? I've been doing that for too many years, and now that my parents are passed away, I don't have to do it anymore. So I quit, you know?
I can't blame you at all.
You know?
But I
can't stand what they did to the grandbaby, so I don't want them around, you know?
How is the baby? How old's the baby? How's the baby doing?
She is 7 years old now, and the photographs that we get over the internet shows that she's healthy, she's beautiful, she's active, and she's being raised in a world that we don't abide with and don't belong to, and that's not to her new stepmother and her father are these kind of people that take motorcycles and heavy gas guzzling toys out into the deserts and the mountains and the lakes, and they've got the boats on the lakes and the motorcycles in the woods, and they just, you know, they make noise and they make pollution all over the planet. If they just took her hiking with a backpack on and they went to learn about Mother Nature, then I'd be thrilled that she's out there. But she's on an ATV with a helmet buzzing across the desert cutting up ground, you know?
Yeah, it's no fun if it's not generating at least 112 decibels.
Right, and when you raise your children that way, they grow up to have hardened nerve systems and hardened spirits, and you can't get through to them. So we've more or less lost our only grandchild that way, you know? We're quiet country people, and, you know, we like the garden and the flowers and the birds and the bees, and that making the noise with the engines just isn't right, you know?
Yeah. Oh, God. But again, how many times over has something similar to that happened? You know, I go back to the Republican Ladies Club of Alabama that had their campaign to change the Constitution a couple of years ago because they were concerned with what they called anchor babies, whereby babies born in the United States could anchor illegal aliens to our national soil. I hate it. I just despise
wow.
it. Yeah, and I mean, they were selling anchor babies, little doll babies with anchors, you know, with little dark, you know, little dark-skinned Hispanic-looking baby dolls with anchors on them. They were selling them to raise money for the Republican Party of Alabama.
That's horrifying.
Yeah, well, it's the next step to it's a step on the way to the dehumanization of a certain class of individuals, whereby we make a determinate look. We're headed for feudalism, Fourth Reich, Schmorth Reich. We're headed. They don't want that. They want pure, outright feudalism and serfdom.
Uh huh.
It's apparent to me. To hear this freak Neil Bortz this afternoon blabbing away about how the Mexicans are living 20 to a house and they got their trucks parked in the yard with their ladders on it, and the neighborhood's just gone to hell.
Oh, my God.
I mean, this is the kind of stuff that the right-wing hate machine is spewing out there every day, Cindy. Every blessed day. This is what sells bowling ball, vacuum cleaners that pick up bowling balls and Swedish mattresses and buy gold now. All the crap that gets advertised on right-wing radio.
Isn't that awful, buy gold now?
Yeah. Gold will never be... Gold will never be a better value. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, yeah. I got a bridge in Brooklyn I can sell you if you'd go for that, you know?
Yeah. Or let's see, what else do they advertise? Oh, yeah, Incorporate in Nevada. That's another big one. Savage
yeah,
runs that
one
a lot. Yeah.
I don't listen to the guy at all.
No, but it's instructive sometimes if you can take your medicine and just sort of strap into the chair and, I don't know, duct tape a tennis ball into your mouth to muffle the screaming. to hear some of this filth. It's a 24-hour drumbeat of racism and bigotry and prejudice and hatred. And these are the people, you know, Trent Lott, he's not so happy. They loved right-wing hate radio when it was serving their purposes.
Well, you know...
But now they've turned on them.
You know, Senator Edwards' wife that had words with that ugly man-woman
yeah.
this last week... and then she sent out this letter asking for donations so that they can carry the torch and so forth. Well, I went to Crooks or Liars and listened to a clip on their site where she was talking to
David Gregory.
Yes, David Gregory. And in the interview with David Gregory, she said that hate radio, or he asked her a question regarding whether or not the hate radio was going on both sides of the fence, whether the left-wingers were doing the same thing as the right-wingers, and he was really driving it home. And she admitted, she said, oh, yes, it goes on both sides. So last night I wrote her a very, very clearly stated, eloquent letter that she was dead wrong, and I challenged her to listen to left-wing radio and not that radio station up in New York where they fired Malloy. I told her not to listen to that one because that radio station is being overtaken and ground into the ground because the right wing saw it as an enemy tool that lost them votes all over America. So they got their boy to go over and buy that station and put it to bed by stuffing it with Republicans. So that's not really a liberal station. So I told her to listen to your station and to listen to the Nova M station, and you tell me whether or not that's hate radio. And if you find that it's hate radio, I would like you very much to show me the verbal clip where the hate was said on that radio station. Anything that is like what they're doing on right-wing radio, calling people horrifying names, accusing them of things they never did, stuff like they do to your husband. I want to hear you tell me that one guy did that on our side of the fence.
Oh, I don't know. I might be guilty, Cindy.
I don't know. I don't think so. I explained to her that when somebody says something that can be proven, that's factually true, that you're answering a comment that someone said or you're pointing out something that somebody did, and it can be pointed at and shown that this happened and this is my opinion of it, that's not hate radio. But when you make something up out of whole cloth that's not true, and you say so-and-so is a such-and-such because they do this or that, and it's a complete fabrication, that's hate radio.
Yeah, like when Man Coulter says that Elizabeth Edwards drives around in a vehicle with a bumper sticker that says, "Ask me about my dead kid."
That's a bald-faced lie.
Yeah, it is.
Nobody on our side of the fence ever does anything like that, not even close. I've never heard anyone on our side of the fence make up things like that. I've heard people call in and make a joke, you know, but it's very clearly understood that it's a joke and it's tongue-in-cheek. But their side, when they make up something like that, it's not a joke and it's not tongue-in-cheek, it's mean.
No. I remember when Man Coulter said in all seriousness that Mr. and Mrs. Clinton decorated their private White House Christmas tree with condoms.
That's horrifying. That's the type of thing I'm trying to draw attention to. Our side doesn't say things like that. But when we hear her say something like that, we'll repeat the story and say, "What do you think of this person who would make up a scenario like that out of whole cloth?" And then we talk about what a degraded person that is. But she bought the farm when she said it in the first place.
Well, I'd do everything in my power not to talk about that creature.
Yeah.
Because to one degree or another, it's what it wants. Like something like like the Star Trek salt monster. It'll do anything to get the stuff.
Yeah, she actually is stimulated by that type of reaction from people. It stimulates her, makes her blood flow, and. I won't give her what she wants. And you said sometimes you have to go to the enemy camp and listen to what's being said. I disagree with you. I haven't gone to the enemy camp and listened to anything for 10 years. All I have to do is turn my computer on, and there's a million people out there that are telling me what was said.
Yeah, well, News Hounds over there, their motto is, "We watch Fox so you don't have to."
Yeah, there's 1,000 sites out there like that that tell you what's going on television and everywhere else. I don't have television. I don't watch television at all. I got rid of television during the Clinton impeachment days. I was so angry. I was so angry with what they were doing that we unplugged the television, put it in the back of the pickup truck, and drove way out into the woods and threw it off a cliff and let it drop down shattered into a million pieces.
Polluter.
And then we drove way down to the bottom of the hill, and we got out there with our dustpans and our shovels, and we picked it up and threw it on the back of the truck and went to the dump. And they have a recycle bin for junk like that. But we just had to smash it, you know. So we know this place where we could throw it off the cliff and watch it go down and hit, you know.
I honestly don't know. I couldn't tell you the last television program that I watched from start to finish. It's pretty much out of my life, too, because I spend almost all my time right here. You know, Agnes and I were galley slaves. We're chained to the mixing board. You know, stroke.
Yeah. Well, I listen to radio all the time, too. I listen to your show in the daytime and Mike in the evening, and then I've got this big place to take care of. But when I feel like getting lost in TV, like at night just before I go to sleep, sometimes I like to watch a little TV. I'll take out a DVD and watch something, and I like science fiction, so, like, for me, I watched Outer Limits last night. When was the last time you saw the original Outer Limits?
Oh, golly.
63, 64. This is terrific. I have the whole series, and I just pull a film out and watch one of those oldies.
That's wonderful, and it's enjoyable and no commercials. And I went on a YouTube binge the other day, and found it because I love classic comedy. If you go to YouTube and you really need a laugh, you go to YouTube and you search. Copper Clapper. It's a 1968 exchange. It's a bit between Johnny Carson and Jack Webb, done absolutely deadpan. Yeah, the Copper Clapper caper.
Yes.
And I just sat here and came unglued and hollered for Agnes.
Hilarious?
Yeah, I was clutching my sides. The tears were rolling out of my eyes, and she's like, "What's wrong with you?" And I managed to restart the thing, and then she came unglued.
I know. It's great. I've got the Carson video collection, and it's in there. I love Carson.
It's precious. And there's ways of being entertained, even by video, without turning on, without supporting these SOBs who are trying to destroy us, our government, our culture, our way of life.
Exactly.
I can't give
them another dime. I can't give them any money for TV for what they're doing to us.
Well,
they're the enemy, and I won't give them my money.
Precisely. I won't statistically support them, because somewhere out there there's a Nielsen family that represents me not watching anything, and that's fine.
Yeah, that's my Nielsen family, too. And, on YouTube, you mentioned YouTube. I was telling Agnes before I got on the line with you that I sent you a link for a program called HAARP, H-A-A-R-P.
Uh-huh.
There's a one-hour program out there that's really a good history of the HAARP program that's on...
The weather manipulation,
Yeah, actually it's on Gooba, G-U-B-A, Gooba. Gooba is very much like YouTube, and it's on the Gooba site. Just go to Gooba and search the word HAARP with two A's in it.
Okay.
And that's a heck of a show. They're manipulating the ionosphere and messing with our weather. And we need to put a stop to that program immediately. You think giving this baboon in the White House the keys to an atomic bomb is dangerous? That's a firecracker compared to this thing. This thing is really dangerous. And he can destroy the world with it. Basically, it's Tesla's technology.
Nikola Tesla, sure.
Yeah,
sure.
It's Tesla's technology, and it's real, and it's in Alaska and elsewhere.
Oof. Well, I just noticed that a bunch of counties here in West Virginia, they're begging for them to be declared disaster areas because of the drought that's hitting us. West Virginia's in drought, and I get hit with the thunderstorm. You know, Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah, my luck.
We put in tanks on the high hills above our place and filled them with water, 50-gallon to 100-gallon tanks, as many of them as we could get, and filled them with water, getting ready for a drought, wondering if we were going to get hit because everybody else is being hit. And it's been raining really nice. We have no drought here. It's beautiful.
Well, that's like it was so miserably dry down in Australia, and John is, John's paddling around his apartment now.
Oh, my.
All this, but see, that's what happens when you've got these manipulation issues, and whether it's intentional or unintentional manipulation via global climate change, one of the first things that the model predicts is this sort of heaven or hell syndrome. No balance, no harmony. You're either bone dry or you're sopping wet. You're either a desert or a swamp, and there's no middle ground anymore.
Well, I don't believe that any government or any person in the entire planet has the right, has the moral or legal right to mess with the weather systems of the planet. I don't think anyone has the right to do that, because this world, this planet, this earth, the ground that we walk on and the air that we breathe and the water we drink and the food that we need to live, it's not theirs to toy with. It's not theirs. And we have to somehow...
Well, you know, there's your planet
have got to stand up for ourselves and stop these people, or they're going to kill the all of us.
Yeah, I know, and there's your Christian dominionism for you. You know,
yeah.
The earth is the dominion of man to do with as it sees fit, and it'll be the death of us. Cindy, I've got to roll on. You have a wonderful weekend. I so very enjoy our conversation. I hope we have another one soon.
I did too, Bob. I'll call back.
You take care.
You too.
Bye bye. And John, calling from Vermont. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
I'm getting along, I think.
That's good.
It gets a little depressing sometimes. You get worried about things, whether people are messing with the weather or unintentionally destroying the planet. It's not a pretty picture sometimes.
Well, I've been enjoying your program tonight. Some of the ladies have been calling up and talking about the country, and I live in the country, and I've been really enjoying it. I just had to say that, you know, sometimes we talk about politics so much and talk about the politicians that we hate so much, but sometimes it's just nice to hear people talk about how they enjoy the, you know, the country, the trees, just natural what's there. The lady that was talking before was talking about people, you know, going in the countryside and having ATVs and stirring up the country. And it's just so nice to be able to sometimes appreciate what's there without having to change it. You know, we take America and we just want to turn it into a resort when the best resort is what it is. I don't know if that makes any sense to you.
No, it makes plenty of sense, because there's a philosophy behind the bad side of that, John. And that philosophy is that... if there's a nice place on the planet, it's only nice if our betters are able to enjoy it well. And one of the first things it calls to mind in the series in the Washington Post about Dick Cheney, what was it called? Angler. Yeah, Angler. One of the things it mentioned is that one of his first goals was to roll back everything that the Clinton administration did to take some of our natural wilderness areas completely... The Clinton administration had taken it completely out of play. It was just going to be what it was. If there was undergrowth, there was undergrowth. If it was old-growth forest, it was old-growth forest. But we weren't going to cut timber roads into it. We weren't going to let snowmobiles into it. We weren't going to let motocross bikes and four-wheelers into it. If you got to it, you were going to get to it on your feet, and you were going to enjoy it that way. And the first thing that Dick Cheney did was to have all that stuff rescinded and allow timbering, timber roads, and snowmobiles and four-wheelers to go howling through those wilderness areas.
Unbelievable. You know, we had a bear come by our house the other night. And, I mean, I live in the woods, in a log cabin, this sort of thing. That's not where I am right now, but that's where my home is. And I can't believe how, in the last few years, how much wildlife has come back over the last 10 years or so. Wild turkeys, the bald eagle. You actually see eagles. And when I was a kid, we never saw these things. DDT wiped out all kinds of, or just about wiped out all kinds of species of animals and birds.
Mm-hmm.
And we have them again.
Well, you had 8 years of the Clinton administration being fairly serious about it, John.
That's right. And now
now you're seeing, you know, the bald eagle just got taken off the endangered species list. Well, that's because of the diligent stewardship that took place up in part under 8 years of the Clinton administration. And now you've got nearly 8 years of the Bush administration. It's off the endangered species list now. And I'm sure there is some Republican out there who's thinking he'd love to have him a mess of fried eagle. Because that's the way these people are. They kill.
Unbelievable. I have a hard time understanding. you know, I'm here listening to people tonight talking. Obviously, a lady was calling, I think, from Portland area. Another one, another fellow spoke from over in Maine.
Yeah.
And obviously, these people must live in the country because of the things they're saying. And it's very dear to me. And it's a nice tonight. I don't get a chance to listen to you all the time, but it was really nice to hear people talk about this. The other thing I just wanted to say before I go is I've been racking my brain for, I've been listening to you now, I guess, about a year, a little over a year. And I've been trying to figure out what would be the best thing we could do to fix America. I mean, what one thing do we need to do that would fix this country? And I think it comes down to basically one word. We have to bring back integrity.
There's
just no integrity anymore. If we could just...
Not in government.
Well, yeah, but even... You know, I think, I hate to say it, but I think our government represents a lot of what our people are like. They don't have, people are out chasing a dollar every day, which I guess they have to do, but even those that have a lot of them, all they want is more. There's just more greed. It really comes down to, I think, there's just no integrity. The integrity is gone.
Well, That's a valid word, John. How about contentment? We are not, when you talk about, you know, people going and getting and more and, oh, I've got a 42-inch TV, but the 50-inch is out, and I need to go in debt for the 50-inch TV because, you know, there's no functional difference between the two. But, you know, people throw out perfectly good stuff to get new stuff because we are hypnotized or brainwashed or whatever by this consumer culture where if there is a word for what we aren't, that word is content.
Maybe.
I mean, can we... for instance, and this is the extreme end, we were talking earlier in the program about the State Farm CEO who got a $20 million or $12 million Christmas bonus a couple of years ago. What is the cutoff line for that man's contentment? What would make him content? But more importantly, I don't think those people can ever be content. They will die grasping, you know what I mean? But what for those of us in the middle and lower classes, what constitutes contentment? To be able to sit in your cabin in the woods and watch snow fall in the winter and watch the woods fill up with snow like something out of a Robert Frost poem and hear that just overweening silence that it absorbs sound. And to sit there and know that you're warm and you got plenty to eat and you maybe got a book to read. What more does a person need? You know what I mean?
Personally, I think I'm the richest person in the world when I'm doing that.
Yeah.
When I drive to work in the morning, I see some of the most beautiful vistas in this country. And to me, I couldn't live if I couldn't see that every day. And I think that's what we have to have. I mean, there has to be more than just chasing more. I think it's all there for us. I mean, the trees, the animals, having a good neighbor, somebody that gives you a smile once in a while.
Yeah.
I think those things are important.
Oh, it's treasure. We've got some of the most wonderful neighbors in the world, John. A couple of weeks ago, our neighbor came over and brought us a big bag of fresh picked lettuce and some green onions for wilted lettuce bowls. And you know what? I could have, if I'd had the money, I could have gone to the Four Seasons or any of these fabulous restaurants. I couldn't have got a better meal. I could not have gotten a better meal. And I could not have had a better feeling about it than what I got when my neighbor handed it to me. Christmas morning, I always do this thing called Oysters Bienville, and I carry them around the neighbors just as a little, you know, good morning, happy Christmas kind of thing. And that means more to me than any 7-course meal in any fine dining establishment. And I'm not tooting my own horn, but you're absolutely right. There's happiness there if we'll slow down to get it, if we'll slow down to enjoy it, if we'll just take a breath. But this is a culture, you know, we talk about what poisons us. This is a culture that has been told that if it's not getting, it's doing something wrong.
Unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, there's stuff I want. There's stuff I'd like to have. I'm a car geek. I'd love to have a howling sports car.
How about a Cobra?
Oh, Lordy. I got a thing about Porsches, too. No sports car. And Agnes is sitting here shaking her finger at me. No sports car. She
but
doesn't
maybe the best car you're ever going to own is the one you always wanted.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes not getting it, but wanting it is probably the best.
Well, that was the lesson my mother handed to me, John. When I was a little boy, we only had one car. My dad would have it at work, and she and I would walk a couple of miles to the nearby shopping center. And, you know, this is the early 60s, mid-60s, not a lot of money in the pocket. But just as a little boy holding my mother's hand, walking down that strip of the various little stores, and not a bunch of them chains or anything, just little proprietorships, and looking in the windows. And she looked at me, John, and it will go with me to the grave. She said, you know, sometimes it's fun just to want things. A lot more fun than it is getting them.
Before I go, I got to tell you a little story about this lady was speaking earlier about Christmas and not being big. We don't really celebrate a commercial Christmas. In my family, it's just basically having family together. But the best Christmas I can remember when I was about 8, 9 years old, I guess, was the year my father and mother, we had a very rough time financially. I can't say that I grew up poor or anything like that, but it was a year my parents had a rough time financially. And we needed to get a Christmas tree, or we wanted a Christmas tree. And in those days, you know, we couldn't even afford the $3 in the city where I was living to buy one. So my father and I went out. It was Christmas Eve, and this is kind of interesting. It was a very cold, this is up in Canada. We were walking on the city street to a corner where they were selling trees. And we picked up what was left of a tree, just a couple of branches on it. And there were all branches left around from where they'd been selling Christmas trees. We picked up the branches, brought them home with this kind of a stump, got a drill, drilled holes, put the branches in, and decorated that artificial tree, if you will. And that's my best memory of Christmas. In my life, that's the best.
Because it was pure, it was honest.
That's right. There was very little under the tree. I can remember my mother baking and making cookies and things. It was the best Christmas we ever had. We have to start looking at the small things, the things that we can appreciate.
And, you know, there is that involves your word as well, John, integrity. There are integrity. There is integrity to those kinds of celebrations. A willingness to look up and realize how good, you know, we're certainly not wealthy by any stretch of the imagination here, but we got it mighty good because we've got each other. And we've got a host of friends all around the country that are like family. And, you know, the integrity, contentment, and the key to this discussion we're having, John, has been interaction with other good people. And part of that what happens is when you have that kind of interaction, you end the isolation. And I think part and parcel of the consumer culture that has this country in its clutches is isolation. We have 622 channels of television that we can watch for 365 days a year and never need to leave the house and never need to know what's going on or even caring what's going on with our neighbor down the street or in our town down the road. And ending that isolation is a big part of it too, isn't it?
Yep. Well, thank you for talking to me tonight.
Oh, anytime, John. It's always a pleasure.
And I have emailed you in the past. If you would send me an address where I can, you indicated at one point that you like Vermont cheese.
Oh, gosh.
And if you will tell me where I can send you some, I will do so.
Oh, that's wonderful. I will, don't hang up. When we go away, Agnes will give you an address.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, John. Oh, thank you very much.
Have a good evening.
You too. You Bye. Too. Question coming out from one of our pals in the chat room, Cassie. Why are we talking about Christmas? I don't know how we got to Christmas, but I think that's in a way some of the purer sides of that. Of that holiday, or what, you know, every year at that time of year, oh, we need to learn to make it Christmas 24. Yeah. Well, then we talk about the fundamental decencies that are supposed to be celebrated by that at times other than that, and I think that's what we're trying to do here. Some of this doesn't seem so hard to do if you just take, you know, if you slow down long enough to even think about it. You know, the endangered species stuff that we were talking about, that John mentioned, the bald eagle, nature is very resilient, and nature will try to come back. But not if it's under constant assault. We talk about these things as liberals and progressives because, you know what, if you never see a bald eagle in the wild as a liberal or as a progressive or as what I like to consider a decent human being, you recognize that it's not there for your viewing pleasure. It's there because it's supposed to be there. It's there because in this natural scheme of things, it ought to be there. Millions of years of evolution have provided it at this time. And so it means something to us. I hate to get maudlin melodramatic, but when I see a peregrine falcon soaring through the New River Gorge, a little bit of my soul can go there. Because, you know, you can get up eye level with the rim of the gorge and you can look down in it and you can actually, in your own mind, see a little bit of what that falcon sees. On the other hand, however, yesterday's BART Cop page, the page starts with a quote, just barely down, from that drug-addled, draft-dodging junkie Rush Limbaugh. This is a quote from him. "Pardon my French, but the barred owl is kicking the ass out of the northern spotted owl. They're raping female spotted owls." Exactly. So if you're going to put an abuse billboard anywhere, put in the great Northwest to get them these barred owls to stop picking on the northern spotted owl. What a loathsome piece of trash he is. He can't go far enough, he can't go fast enough, he can't eat enough, he can't drink enough, he can't take enough pills to make it tolerable for him to be inside his own brain. And because he's evil, and because he's nasty, and because he's vile, he makes attempts at humor like what you just heard. You know, there's always got to be some sexual violence or sexual innuendo in anything that passes for humor coming out of that junkie's mouth. And it's a way of saying, well, you know, so what if we, you know, almost drove our national symbol to extinction? So what if we almost poisoned it out of existence? It's those other owls that are raping. Shut up. But of course, that's how they are. And this is not to say that this is anything new. Not by any stretch of the imagination. Not at all. This has been going on for a while. By way of example, a little something here, if I can find it. We're going to have Poetry Corner. It's one of my favorites. It's here we go. Yeah, there it is. 1807. How's that? 1807, England in the grips of the beginnings of the Industrial Revolution. Not quite there yet, but the spiritual fingertips of greed and avarice were already snaking their way through the English body politic and society and culture. And oddly enough, William Wordsworth spent most of his life, he was a country boy living in the rural northwest of England, an area called the Lake District. And so he sees what's going on in the city centers, far removed from nature, far removed from the real world. And he writes this sonnet, and it says, "The world is too much with us. Late and soon, getting and spending, we lay waste our powers. Little we see in nature that is ours. We have given our hearts away, a sordid boon. The sea that bears her bosom to the moon, the winds that will be howling at all hours, are upgathered now like sleeping flowers. For this, for everything, we are out of tune. It moves us not. Great God, I'd rather be a pagan, suckled in a creed outworn. So might I, standing on this pleasant lea, have glimpses that would make me less forlorn, have sight of Proteus rising from the sea, or hear old Triton blow his wreathed horn." Okay, it's probably a little too florid for 21st century America, but you pretty much get the idea, don't you? That's us. I don't know, make it scan and make it rhyme and work in a line about 52-inch LCD televisions with the flat panels. That's us. "The world is too much with us, late and soon. Getting and spending, we lay waste our powers." Now, this is not to say that watching TV is evil or to indict anyone who has a favorite television show. But like the ancient Greeks said, moderation in all things. Too much TV will kill you just as quick as too much anything else will lay you down. I think there's a lot of people out there that don't know that. And a lot of people who live with the TV being bombarded every day. You need to, and you smell bad too. It's not what we're here for. It's not what this country's about. It certainly isn't what Mr. Jefferson was thinking about when he wrote that beautiful document that we'll be taking a long, loving look at Tuesday evening before the 4th. No. He had visions of a civil, decent society of free individuals actively engaged in their own freedom and living examined lives, to get all platonic. How many of us examine our lives? Can you examine your life in between, during commercial breaks? I have no faith in that. So we'll come back in the final hour for this evening. And there are a couple of stories that I'm sort of hell-bent on getting to. And we will. We'll get to your phone calls, too, at 304-658-5912. 304-658-5912. Of course, the lightning never did take out my email, bob@headonradio.com. I welcome your thoughts. This is America's liberal voice. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. A massive manhunt is underway in London after two foiled car bombings in the city's busy center. London's extensive video surveillance system is being searched for possible pictures of the driver of one of those vehicles. The first car, a Mercedes packed with gasoline, propane cylinders, and nails, was left outside a nightclub. Experts defused the device. A cell phone found inside was the likely trigger. The second car was found a half mile away. British Prime Minister Gordon Brown, who just took office 2 days ago, said the country faced a serious and continuous threat. He said the incident reminds the public of the dangers that face Britain. Britain is now on a terror threat level classified as severe, one level lower than the highest critical alert. The bomb scare in London has caused New York police to take extra precautions. Additional officers were sent to the mass transit system and Times Square. However, the U.S. threat level remains unchanged. The Supreme Court has reversed course and decided to hear Guantanamo Bay detainee cases challenging their indefinite confinement there. There are 375 detainees at Guantanamo, and many have been held there for 5 years. In the month of June, 99 U.S. military personnel died in Iraq. The past 3 months have been the deadliest of the war, killing 329 U.S. forces. Since the war began, 3,569 U.S. troops have been killed. The United Nations voted 14-0 to shut down the inspection bodies responsible for monitoring Saddam Hussein's nuclear, chemical, and biological weapons programs. Russia abstained from that vote. The United Nations Nuclear Agency and North Korean officials agreed in principle to the logistics of shutting down the communist country's main nuclear reactor. And the U.S. reached an agreement with the European Union to share data on transatlantic air passengers. Washington says the exchange is needed to help fight terrorism. The agreement will replace an interim deal that expires at the end of next month. Some evacuated residents are returning to their homes near Lake Tahoe. The wildfire there is now about 70% contained. Since breaking out Sunday, flames have destroyed 254 homes and forced 3,500 people to evacuate. You're listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business, coming up.
Monterey is the home of a new national radio voice. It's America Back on Track from the Quality News Network. Tune in weekdays at noon Pacific to this new national broadcast, a conversation with America designed to get our country back on track. America Back on Track features local and long-distance guests sharing global ideas on where we are, how we got here, where we want to go, and how we might get there. So take an hour out of your day to plug into the future, our future. Discover the solutions to the problems that have gridlocked our nation for all too long. Eschew the agenda-driven palaver of the left and the right. Tune into America Back on Track for honest talk about the important issues and how they can be resolved. America Back on Track, weekdays at noon on KRML, 1410 a.m. in the Monterey area, and streaming live online at QNNAmerica.com. America Back on Track, our ticket to a healthy and productive future.
NASA's Mars rover will take a risky trip into a deep impact crater on the Red Planet to gather more geological information. Today's descent into Victoria Crater was given the okay because NASA scientists say the rewards outweigh the risks of losing the rover. U.S. researchers say that even brief exposure to secondhand smoke, such as in restaurants and bars, can result in detectable levels of a carcinogen linked to lung cancer. Northwest Airlines says it plans to rehire about 400 laid-off pilots. It's part of the carrier's plan to get summer operations back to normal after canceling more than 1,000 flights in the past week. In May, consumer spending was up 0.5%, according to the Commerce Department. However, Americans' personal savings rate is a negative 1.4%. China's economy is expected to grow this year at the fastest pace in 12 years. China's drawing closer to replacing Germany as the world's third largest economy. And light sweet crude oil is trading at $70.68 a barrel on the New York Mercantile. At the close of Wall Street today, the Dow ended down 14 points at 13,408. The NASDAQ was down 5 points, and the S&P closed down 2 points. And there's always more news at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Laurel Krissen.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Almost 6 minutes past the hour. I'm Bob. Welcome back. Like you went somewhere. I sat right here in the chair. I don't think anybody went anywhere. But you have to say welcome back because it's radio and stuff. Agnes went somewhere. Welcome back, Agnes.
Thank you.
Oh, okay. Just a couple of news stories along the way because I wasn't here yesterday, so you have to put up with me because I didn't get it out of my system then. I am a llama. It's all about me. I know. We hate everybody hates Disney films. But yeah, back when the kids were younger, several years ago, we took them to see what was it, The Emperor's New Groove. And Agnes has accused me ever since of being the llama. Yeah, because David Spade did the voiceover, and he did a lovely job. Hey, why is the camera over there? Why are you zooming over there? Pull back. The pan over here. It's about me.
Not about you.
It's about me. I am not that way. She's just mean. Let's start off with this little bit. To wit. How about this evening's edition of the Smarmy Horse's Ass Award? The Smarmy Horse's Ass Award this evening goes to Stephen Hunter, who is apparently has it in his head that he is sick little settlings that pass for his brain, that he is the film critic of the Washington Post, or a film critic of the Washington Post. Or, as may be the case, some drunk they hauled in off the streets. And, here, watch a movie. What do you think? From today's Washington Post, he writes, "Ladies and gentlemen, I think we can agree on two things. The American health care system is busted, and Michael Moore is not the guy to fix it."
Oh, you're cute.
"His sicko, an investigation and indictment of a system choking on paperwork, greed, bad policy, and countervailing goals, turns out to be a funny, toothless collection of anecdotes, a few stunts, and a bromide-rich conclusion."
Bromide-rich?
Don't I take bromides? Never mind.
His problem, he never goes for the big picture.
How much bigger do you want it to be, Stephen? I'm sorry, Mr. Hunter, if indeed that is your name? The whole national health care system is flat, stone, cold, broken in a million pieces, and he lays it out and proves it for you. But he's missing the big picture? What big did he not show us the suffering CEOs who only get $12 million Christmas bonuses? Jiminy.
He has some fun with what might be called inciting incidents. Metaphorical examples, up close and personals with the aggrieved, some muckraking and the like. In the end, it's as if he's afraid of losing his audiences with charts, numbers, and assessments from neutral sources, unlike the similar techniques used by Al Gore in An Inconvenient Truth. Moore never interviews actual veterans of the system. Doctors, nurses, administrators. Wait, it takes a lot of nerve, it takes a lot of chutzpah to write this phrase and publish it in the Washington Post and think you're going to be able to walk out on the street and not be hit with rotten eggs and soft tomatoes and cabbages and the like.
Moore never interviews actual veterans of the system, doctors, nurses, administrators, only the victims. Only the victims. You know, there was a shooting the other day and 12 people were gunned down and killed and 14 others were wounded, and well, they only interviewed the victims.
They never interviewed the gun manufacturers. They didn't interview the people who made the bullets. They only interviewed the victims.
Call me crazy. Okay, you're crazy. Call me a cab. You're a cab. But if you're making a movie about a broken healthcare system and what it does to the human beings who suffer from it, wouldn't you, movie maker, wouldn't you make it about the victims and not about the doctors and nurses? You know, the shame of it all is the movie was already made by the time that we found out about that poor lady in Los Angeles who literally laid on the floor of an emergency room coughing up blood and only got relief right before she died by being handcuffed to a wheelchair and taken out by the cops.
They never interviewed the nurses and the doctors. They only interviewed the victims. I don't understand. You're missing the big picture if you're not interviewing the doctors.
There's lots of interviews with doctors out there, Stephen Hunter, you jackass. See? Okay. Hate radio. Sorry. Mr. Hunter, you sadly misguided individual. If you are going to tell the story of a broken healthcare system, it is best to tell that story through the eyes of the people who suffer from it, not the people who are rewarded by it. I'm not talking about nurses here. I'm not talking about nurses at all. Nurses are among the least rewarded in this healthcare system. In my hometown in Alabama, I have recently found out from friends down there that the hospital where I was born has swept away every last one of its licensed practical nurses, LPNs. Nothing there now but RNs and certified nursing assistants. Not so sure I want to get sick in Florence. Thus we get, Mr. Hunter writes, whom I'm sure is loved by someone. Thus we get a bottom-up, not a top-down, or a full frontal view of the creaking system. Oh, I see. I see, Mr. Hunter, you elitist bastard. Oh, I did it again. The victims of America's warped, broken, destroyed, greed-driven, profit-operated system. The victims of that system are the bottom of it, according to Stephen Hunter. The film progresses from anecdote to anecdote along predictable lines. American health coverage equals bad. European health coverage equals good. He leaves out the boring parts, forgetting that as far as policy intense healthcare issues are concerned, the only things that matter are the boring parts. What are you... My father would look at this and say, you know, the poor little guy couldn't get out of Miss Hugert's ninth grade journalism class. Miss Hugert being the Depression era benchmark for all things journalistically good. American health care coverage equals bad. European health care coverage equals good. Isn't that kind of how it is? 24 out of the 25 top industrialized nations provide health care as a matter of a basic human right. Guess who the 25th that doesn't is? But you see, as we approach the 4th of July, and we cause ourselves to look backwards and read those words on the Declaration of Independence, and then we take ourselves a decade or so forward, and we contemplate where that declaration led with the ratification of the Constitution of the United States and its Bill of Rights. And then we fast forward to today, we find out that the Bill of Rights just doesn't matter for much anymore. First Amendment? Well, if it has to do with your right to believe that a piece of cracker turns into Jesus meat in your belly, that thing's strong and alive and vibrant. If, however, you as a student want to stand on a sidewalk with a banner that says Bong Hits for Jesus, which means precisely nothing, your First Amendment rights aren't worth a tinker's damn. On the other hand, if you've got a whole bunch of money that you've gathered up because you're a healthcare company that wants to spend money defeating a politician who believes in single-payer, not-for-profit health insurance for all Americans, well, the Supreme Court has recently ruled that it would be a violation of your First Amendment rights to keep you from sleazing up the airwaves with your stinking partisan ads 6 weeks before an election. So your First Amendment rights are rock solid there. If, however, you're a working American who wants to be a member of a union and wants to freely associate with whom he wants or she wants by virtue of checking off a card and thereby creating a union by virtue of a majority of those who checked off that card, your First Amendment rights are, once again, not worth a tinker's damn. But if you want to roll around on the floor and speak in tongues and do all that, First Amendment, right, just the thing for you. Second Amendment, alive and strong. Absolutely. Have as many guns as you want. If you should happen to blow your foot off, don't be coming to us for health care, okay? You'll just learn to limp. Fourth Amendment. Just kind of glossing over the third. That's not even worth talking about. Fourth Amendment. Illegal searches and seizures and a statement in the Constitution that says you are, as a matter of right, to be secure in your persons, papers, and effects. Dude, the cops can knock down your door. Beat your old granny to a pulp. Beat her! Shoot her! They can shoot her. If your little toddler crawling by the door at the time the cops blow through, they don't have to knock, so they can bash her brains into the wall. All without a warrant. So, Fourth Amendment, not so much. And we can go on through the confrontation clause and the right to a speedy trial and a right to a jury of your peers. And then that last one about powers not expressly given to the federal government being reserved unto the states. No, they're reserved to Dick Cheney, sweetheart. So this smarmy review basically says that the healthcare system is screwed up, but don't pay attention to any of the damning evidence that Michael Moore presents before your lying eyes. Just like on the 4th of July, we'll stand around and watch the fireworks go up and somebody will play the Star Spangled Banner. And we'll all go home going, oh, we live in a free country. Tell you what, why don't you take a megaphone with you to the 4th of July fireworks display, open the thing up, and speak into the bullhorn, and tell people what you think should happen to George Bush and see how free you are. You ain't that free. Not at all. Because, after all, we don't want to tell stories, Mr. Hunter, if we're only going to tell them about the victims. About the victims. And then, well, then there's the Supreme Court of the United States. The people who have turned the Bill of Rights into a GD piece of paper, by the way. And I don't know. I'd like to see, well, it's too much to... here, back up. Before we start this, let's understand the world that we're playing in. USA Today today. From the Associated Press. Democratic presidential candidate Barack Obama laid out a list of political shortcomings he sees in the Bush administration, but said he opposes impeachment for either President George W. Bush or Vice President Dick Cheney. Obama said he would not back such a move, although he has been distressed by the, quote, loose ethical standards, the secrecy and incompetence, unquote, of a, quote, variety of characters, unquote, in the administration. He's distressed. He's distressed. But we can't talk only about the victims. We've got to move forward. We've got to have healing in this country, and we can't have healing if we're running around actually obeying the dictates of the Constitution and doing what it says. There's a way to bring an end to those practices, you know, Obama says. Vote the bums out. Well, see, Senator Obama, that's the cool thing. We don't have to vote the bums out. The bums are leaving on January the 20th, 2009, whether they like it or not. They can go head first or feet first for all I care, but they're leaving. They have to leave as a matter of law. We don't have to vote the bums out. The bums aren't running again. It's a new crop of bums, Senator Obama. It's a new crop of bums that if these bums are not reined in, the new crop of bums, should they be elected, will be 1,000 times worse. George Bush is an evil little bug-eyed, beady-eyed, jug-eared lout who sticks M80s up frogs' butts and lights them, okay? And he really did that, okay? That's not hate radio. That's not vitriol. He really, really did that when he was a kid. It's evidence of sociopathy. I mean, that's the kind of bum he is, Senator Obama. But the problem is, can you imagine, Senator, what would happen
if somebody with every bit as much meanness, every bit as much manifest evil in their being as George Bush got in, who was also brilliant. Can you imagine? Can you imagine how much harder it would be to impeach a bum like that, Senator Obama, if we don't even have the guts to impeach a bum like this? He said, quote, "I think you reserve impeachment." Wow, this one's tough to read. "I think you reserve impeachment for grave, grave breaches and intentional breaches of the president's authority." Huh? Wes? Throwing away habeas corpus isn't a grave, grave breach of the president's authority? Ordering American citizens cast into prison without charge, without limit, without access to family, friends, or counsel, is that not a grave breach of presidential authority, Senator Obama? Isn't it? I don't know which constitution you're reading, Senator. The one I'm reading says that it is. Because the one I'm reading doesn't say grave breach of presidential authority, by God, Senator Obama. It says high crimes and misdemeanors. Now, you're a Harvard law man. You've probably read the Constitution more than me. You understand the principle of stare decisis. A principle was established by the Republican Congress that impeached Bill Clinton. I would submit to you, Senator Obama, that that standard, the low end of that standard, has something to do with consensual sex. And if a lie about consensual sex, Senator Obama, constitutes the otherwise undefined high crime and or misdemeanor, then ordering wiretaps on American citizens without any oversight or any authority from the judicial branch whatsoever in direct violation of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, Senator Obama, is a high crime. Starting a war based on lies and prosecuting it on further lies and dummying up the intelligence to fit the facts, as the Downing Street memo says, Senator Obama, is a high crime. So do not give me this silk stocking cocktail party circuit first year law school bug spray about reserving impeachment for grave, grave breaches, because if these are not grave, grave breaches, Senator Obama, I promise you, you will never see one. Because you don't want to. He said, quote, "I believe if we begin impeachment proceedings, we will be engulfed in more of the politics that has made Washington dysfunction. We would once again, rather than attending to the people's business, be engaged in a tit-for-tat, back-and-forth, non-stop circus." Senator Obama, I hate to point out the little tiny car with all the clowns coming out of it behind you, buddy, but you're involved in that non-stop circus already because, sweetheart, you're in the Senate of the United States, and your side couldn't even muster up the guts to stare down the minority and tell them that you would make them pay dearly if they filibustered the Employee Free Choice Act. a simple matter of standing up for the Constitution, Senator Obama, and you, sir, did not do it. And by talking this business about how you can't impeach Bush and Cheney, the two greatest war criminals since the end of the Second World War, you are proving, sir, that you are not worthy or capable of occupying the Oval Office. I sincerely, sincerely suggest you rethink your position. Rather than attending to the people's business. Huh, really? Were you attending to the people's business, Senator, when you worked up that bill that gave George Bush the right to continue his endless war for perpetual peace? Was that the people's business, Senator Obama? How do you define the people's business, Senator Obama? I truly want to know how you define it, sir. Because Senator Obama, not attending to the grave and incredibly serious business of impeachment, is a denial. It is a slap in the face to the people of these United States who send their sons, daughters, husbands, wives, brothers, sisters, cousins, aunts, uncles, mommies and daddies to fight in this illegal occupation for which you cannot find the courage, sir, to stand up and say no. You had your chance. Oh, you voted no on the bill, all right. You waited until the last minute to do so. I understand the political calculation that went into that. Where, sir, were your public statements in support of the idea of not sending a bill at all? Where, sir, were your public statements in support of sending back the same bill that got vetoed? Where were they, Senator? Where were they? We're waiting. But of course, if you addressed questions like that, you might find yourself repeatedly having to address this impeachment issue too. And the more that you say things like you reserve impeachment for grave breaches and intentional breaches of the president's authority, the more you say things like that, Senator Obama, the more we know that you just might hold that Constitution at the same level of disdain as the present occupant of the Oval Office who called it a GD piece of paper. Because if you will not move to enforce its requirements, shall impeach, those are the words, shall, then Senator Obama, what are we to think you would do with a constitutional crisis on your own watch in the Oval Office? Just asking. And the answer is not vote the bums out. This is the Head On Radio Network. This is America's liberal voice. A little bit of in your face truth and honesty. I'm Bob Kincaid. Brought to you by the Republican National Committee, George W. Bush, Maximum Decider.
next time you see a stranger on a plane, a stranger with those swarthy looks we all know, ask yourself, shouldn't I be afraid? Maybe he wants to kill me. Maybe he hates us for our freedom. Fear. It's what's for dinner.
Independent News Week in Review. I'm Doug Cunningham.
The majority of the Senate supports the idea of restoring workers' freedom to form unions and engage in collective bargaining, but they were stopped short of a passage by a Republican-led filibuster.
AFL-CIO Legislative Director Bill Samuel, after anti-union Republicans blocked the 51-vote majority in the Senate on the Employee Free Choice Act labor law reform. Workers and unions aren't giving up on changing labor law to allow workers to join unions by signing cards. It'll be a big issue in the 2008 elections. Immigration reform failed in the U.S. Senate this week. The AFL-CIO opposed the bill, saying that it did not honor either immigrant or U.S.-born workers. SEIU and Unite Here wanted to see an immigration bill pass to provide a path to legalization for undocumented workers. The UAW says workers at Delphi have ratified the tentative agreement the union reached with the bankrupt auto parts supplier by a vote of 68-32%. It cuts wages from a high of about $27 to as low as $14 an hour for some new hires at Delphi. Various buy-down provisions for traditional employees would pay lump sums to a high of $105,000 before taxes in three installments to soften their landing into the lower wages and benefits. The Soldiers of Solidarity group of UAW dissidents opposed the deal. They said that it leaves new hires at Delphi with low pay, no pensions, and substandard health care. Soldiers of Solidarity says that it wipes out 70 years of gains on wages, pensions, health care, and cost of living protection for auto parts workers. A new report from the Economic Policy Institute called the Walmart Effect says the U.S. has lost at least 200,000 jobs due to Walmart's trade with China alone. WakeUpWalmart.com is launching an animated TV spot highlighting the Walmart effect on American jobs. The ad questions why Walmart does business with China, asserting that China sells weapons to terrorists in Afghanistan. The Kroger, Safeway, and Super Value giant national grocery chains are playing hardball as contract talks resume with the United Food and Commercial Workers Union in Southern California. The hugely profitable companies are balking at providing fair wages and good health insurance benefits to 65,000 workers. The UFCW's Mike Shimpak represents Southern California grocery workers.
It's not just about grocery workers in Southern California. It's about what's going to happen to grocery workers and other workers across the United States and anywhere else. Because this is part of a larger trend of companies trying to undermine good middle-class jobs.
Unite Here is helping Latino workers in their effort to organize at Superior Health Lennon's in Wisconsin's capital city. Workers like Carlos Torres make about $10 an hour with no health insurance or sick leave. Torres, speaking here through an interpreter at a public hearing in Madison, says the company is using fear and intimidation to prevent workers from organizing.
It's been really difficult because there's been a lot of fear for people being fired or something being done to them.
Workers Independent News, Week in Review. I'm Doug Cunningham.
Oh, sing it. Sing it. Agnes, I wouldn't have cared if you just played the whole confounded song. I get goosebumps every time I hear that. That ought to be, you know, part of, you know, it's all, every time you go to the 4th of July, it's all Lee Greenwood, I'm proud to be an American. Play that instead. Works a lot better with the fireworks going off and stuff. Okay, the last couple of stories. Ran across part of this I knew about. Part of this I ran across at Campaign for America's Future via Crooks and Liars. The first part, of course, is what came down yesterday from the Supreme Court in the form of what I for want of a better term, call Welcome to Plessyville. And that, for shorthand, if you don't know, and I imagine you do, it's not like I'm talking to Limbaugh's listeners, and you got it, and then you tie your shoes. Plessy versus Ferguson was the evil, nasty. In a way, it was one of the Supreme Court's most revolting moments, in which the standard of separate but equal facilities for separating the races was given the imprimatur of legitimacy by a vile gang of old white men on the Supreme Court. Okay. It was later struck down in the landmark ruling of Brown versus Board of Education, which recognized that a system that contemplated separate but equal by definition never could be equal, and thus began the long, slow, and dare I say bloody process of ending apartheid in the United States. Plessy versus Ferguson was sort of the wicked, incestuous bastard of the Dred Scott case, if you will. And we didn't realize it until yesterday, but from Dred Scott through Plessy, well, like some evil, molded, bloated thing that comes up from the swampy backwaters of the Deep South, Plessy's monster stuck its hand out into the bright light of day yesterday and got new life. It got new life in a 5-4 ruling yesterday involving cases from Louisville and Seattle. Those two cities had mildly and gently moved to try to balance racial makeup in public schools in those two diverse and geographically divergent cities. Brown versus Board of Education struck down segregated buses, segregated schools, segregated lunch counters in the schools, segregated playgrounds and public buildings. And people like George Wallace did his stand in the schoolhouse door in Tuscaloosa and declared, "Segregation yesterday, segregation today, and segregation forever." A few short years later, I was in first grade. You got to take a nap in first grade. I hated nap time. Love nap time now. And little Susie Martin. Gosh, should I use names like this? I hope I'm not offending anybody. Was in my first grade class, and she was black. I was white, and didn't make no never mind. I was starting school. It was first grade. I'd never been in a class that didn't have any black people in it. But there were tensions. Children aren't stupid. But everybody had to take their shoes off and roll out their little foam rubber mat on the floor for nap time in first grade. And there are some questions you can only ask Mama. So I got home after a couple of days of not being able to figure it out for myself. And I said, Mama, why are the soles of Susie's feet as white as mine? And she said, Son, because she's a human being just like you. Well, John Roberts and Samuel Alito and Clarence Thomas and Anthony Kennedy and Tony Scalia don't feel that way. They cited, if you can imagine it, they cited Brown versus Board of Education yesterday in holding that in no wise may a school district consider the issue of race in apportioning its students to its schools. It would be very easy here for me to scream like a banshee and just have a full-on 75-square-foot purple polka-dotted hissy, and it may happen yet. But this is, for me, this case, how can I let you know in your hearts what's going on in mine? For me, this case is like, well, for me, John Roberts and Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito and Scalia and Kennedy could just as well have walked out on the steps of the United States Supreme Court and set fire to the American flag. Because that is what this is. This is a full-on assault of everything that flag is supposed to stand for. I'm almost speechless at it. And you know how hard it is to get me there. A New York Times editorial today called Resegregation Now. The court's radical new majority turned its back on that proud decision in Brown versus Board of Education in a 5-4 ruling written by none other than Chief Justice John Roberts. It has been some time since the court, which has grown more conservative by the year, did much to compel local governments to promote racial integration, but now it is moving in reverse, broadly ordering the public schools to become more segregated. See, they won't act with the heavy-handed and ham-fisted racism of days gone by. You're not going to see in this country, I don't think, water fountains labeled whites only. No, this new breed of racist, this new breed of Republican, this new breed of conservative is going to be far more subtle. You can learn a lot about these people listening to George Bush and hear his truths when he doesn't mean you to hear them. What did he call it? The, oh gosh, somebody help me. The low something of diminished blah, blah, blah. It was on the tip of my tongue, and it's good, but it was the low spark of high-heeled racism. I don't remember. But there was truth in it. And in saying he opposed it, like everything he says, take it, turn it on its ear, and you see what he... They endorse it. So, no. You're not going to see de facto black schools and de facto white schools You're just going to see white schools springing up, being funded by taxpayer dollars in well-heeled white communities. And there won't be any little first grade boys going home and asking their mama why the soles of Susie's feet are white as his own, because he may go from grade kindergarten through grade 12 and never see an African-American face. Oh, he'll be victimized by the marketing, and he'll dress, you know, he'll dress all hip-hop, and it'll look like his pants are falling off, this little white boy. And he'll call people G, and he'll affect the cool, if you will. But he won't experience real interaction with any one of his fellow Americans who look any bit at all different from himself. In the dissent to this revolting case, Justice Stephen Breyer explained, according to the New York Times, just how sharp a break this decision is with history. The Supreme Court has often ordered schools to use race-conscious remedies, and it has unanimously held that deciding to make assignments based on race, quote, to prepare students to live in a pluralistic society, unquote, is, quote, within the broad discretionary powers of school authorities. The thugs, the conservative thugs on the Supreme Court, spat on that concept yesterday. Little white school districts with little white schools with little white children in them, and devil take the hindmost on everything else. You see, I think Roberts and Alito, based on decisions like this and the Bong Hits for Jesus case and a couple of others, should be hailed into the Congress, and they should be impeached. Why? They should be impeached because they perjured themselves. They took an oath. Justice Alito's wife sat right behind him wearing a smart little suit made out of the upholstery from a 1958 Edsel, as he talked under oath about how he would revere precedent. He was asked specifically about Brown versus Board of Education, as was Roberts. And they said they would uphold Roberts, or uphold Brown versus Board of Education. Roberts said that. Alito said that. And this is what they meant. They cited Brown versus Board of Education as standing for the proposition that race can never be considered, when there is an entire line of cases that says specifically the opposite. They lied to the American people. They lied to America. The America they lied to is in part a little town called Jenna, Louisiana, where in September 2006, a group of African-American high school students asked the school for permission to sit beneath a whites-only shade tree. It was an unwritten rule that little African-American children couldn't sit under that tree. The school answered that they didn't care where the students sat. All well and good. The next day, when the children showed up at school, there were three nooses hanging from the tree. Now, they found the white boys who put the nooses in the tree, and they got a 3-day suspension from school. Okay? course, the three boys should have been permanently expelled from the school. The three boys should have been tried and convicted for it. It was a crime. No, we can't have any hate crimes legislation because then the preachers can't. The school administration said it was a harmless prank. Well, since they decided not to deal with it, tensions ran high. And there were fights. And a lot of unpleasantness at the school. And it got so bad that Reed Walters, the district attorney, was called in to lecture the Negroes. And he stared them in the eye, these African-American students. The little boys that hung the nooses in the trees, not part of the lecture. Reed Walters looked the African-American children in the eye and said, and I quote, that he could end their life with the stroke of a pen. Meanwhile, a white man drew a loaded rifle on three of the teenagers at a local convenience store. Black students were assaulted at white parties. Somebody tried to burn down the school. A fight broke out with six black students being charged with attempted murder. And the DA pushed for maximum charges, carrying sentences of 80 years. Four of the six are being tried as adults. Thank you, Justice Roberts. Thank you, Justice Alito. Thank you, Justice Scalia. Thank you, Justice Kennedy. Thank you, Justice Thomas, for helping to make this a little more hateful America. Our good friend Eugene Finnerman over at FinnermanWorks.com in his Your RDA of Irony wrote today, the Supreme Court ruled in a 5-4 decision that Justice Clarence Thomas was to have his own drinking fountain now. Justice Thomas, who voted with the majority, expressed his delight with his separate but equal distinction. The fountain actually is a garden hose located in the back of the Supreme Court building. Writing in her dissent, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg noted that the fountain would be frozen during the winter months. Justice Antonin Scalia responded by punching her in the mouth and writing in Latin verse that snow on the ground made an excellent source of water. The hose will be officially known as the Clarence Thomas Memorial Fountain because, in a 5-4 decision, the court ruled that Justice Thomas should be executed for miscegenation, being how he married a white woman and all. Justice Thomas voted, says our good friend Eugene, with the majority. Thanks, everybody. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll catch you on Monday. Coming up, Strictly Confidential with Peter Godbold. It is, shall we say, a sneak peek into not just the agenda, but the whole damn day planner of the homosexual community.
Yay.
Yay. Stick around. Thanks, Agnes, for producing. Thanks, John Fox, our engineer. Many thanks to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk, serving out over 8 million hours of liberal talk in only a little more than 5 years' time. Thanks to the United Brotherhood of Carpenters who helped us get this whole thing running, and by supporting this network, are helping to save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR. Gina, it's all for you.
There's a lot of bad blood underneath.
This is the Quality News Network. It's been almost 24 hours since a bomb-rigged Mercedes-Benz was found abandoned in front of a popular London nightclub. In the ensuing day, another similar car loaded with similar explosives was found a few blocks away. Close-circuit television cameras have taken a crystal-clear image of the driver of the first car as he ran from the scene. Both cars contained propane cylinders, cans of gasoline, nails, and nuts and bolts. They were rigged with cell phones to ring and trigger the detonators, but after two calls, it failed to blow up. Bomb experts have defused the bombs and are combing through each car, one of which was found to be stolen from Scotland. Police say the devices had the potential to kill hundreds of people. Authorities are searching for three men. The findings come 1 week prior to the second anniversary of the 7-7 bombings of 2005, in which 52 double-decker bus and tube passengers were killed. Newly sworn-in Prime Minister Gordon Brown has called for extra vigilance by police for the next few days. The tennis championships are underway at Wimbledon, and the benefit concert in remembrance of Princess Diana is being held Sunday at Wembley Stadium. The U.S. and the European Union are sharing data on transatlantic air passengers, which Washington says is needed to help fight terrorism. Security has been stepped up at New York City transportation corridors as precaution, and U.S. Homeland Security Chief Michael Chertoff is urging Americans to remain vigilant, but he has not raised the threat level. The Supreme Court has reversed an earlier decision and will allow Guantanamo Bay prison detainees to appeal their confinement. The first two cases will be heard in October. The four men that were accused of plotting to blow up John F. Kennedy International Airport's underground jet fuel pipeline system were indicted by a grand jury this afternoon. All four face life in prison if convicted. In southern Baghdad, five U.S. soldiers were killed, seven wounded today in a coordinated attack using a roadside bomb and RPGs. Islamic extremists are reportedly lurking in internet cafes in Baghdad to see if web surfers are glancing at porn sites, and if so,